Minnesota is east of the Rockies, and you're listening to AM 1500 KSTP. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, or good morning as the case may be, wherever you are in this wide expanse of time zones stretching across a curved, albeit eventually round, globe. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chains in the west, eastward to the Caribbean, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, yes, we're going to be coming to St. Thomas one of these days soon. Down south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and this night we will talk with a man named Dan Sherman. Dan Sherman, who has authored a book called Above Black. Now, we'll tell you a little bit about this. Above Black is a first-person account of alien contact, insider accounts of alien contact. In other words, not something he heard from somebody else, but something he did himself. And, of course, government cover-up. It's one man's deeply personal involvement with a highly classified alien communication government program. The author of the book spent more than 2 years communicating with two alien contacts while working for the National Security Agency, NSA, as a, this is in quotes, intuitive communicator. Above Black is one of the few books ever written providing a first-hand account of the government's contact with aliens. The author can be verified to have held numerous high-level security clearances and assignments at suspect locations, which lends a very great deal of credibility to this fascinating account. From abductions to catastrophic future events, the subjects discussed in Above Black will capture the intellect and emotion of even the most skeptical reader. And tonight, we'll see what it does for listeners. Dan Sherman grew up in Northern California and Oregon. He enlisted in the Air Force in September of 1982, and after serving 7 years as a security policeman, he retrained. I remember a lot of us did that in the Air Force, retrained into the electronic intelligence field. It was during this time that he was indoctrinated into Project Preserve Destiny, one of our nation's most closely held alien contact programs. Now, what do you suppose Project Preserve Destiny might be? Well, we'll find out. As an electronic intelligence specialist in the United States Air Force, Sherman has held some of the highest level security clearances in the nation. Top secret, special compartmental information, code words, secret, special, we did that, compartmental information, well, mostly all is global significance. More importantly, his role as an intuitive communicator for the National Security Agency, NSA, has given him a unique perspective on the subject of governmental cover-ups regarding official alien contact. So, to say the least, this should be very, very interesting. And we will talk with Dan Sherman in a moment. 6-5. Again, 1-800-232-5665. Buy two, get one free when you call now. All right, and so we begin another week with Dan Sherman up in Oregon. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Art. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Dan, this, you know, what I just read about you and what you have done is pretty incredible stuff. You're telling us, let me just ask you up front that I read this correctly, that you had direct contact with aliens with regard to your time in the Air Force. You actually worked in a program in contact with aliens, right?
Yes, I did. It's called Project Preserve Destiny.
Okay. I guess I'm going to let you unwind the story from the beginning, if you would.
Sure. First off, to understand the classification system and how the government is able to keep all of this hidden so effectively, you have to understand what's called the onion effect, and this is how it was described to me and how I understood it when I was in the military. There are different levels of classification, obviously, and they correspond to different names, too, and hence the name of the book, Above Black. You probably are familiar with a book that came out a while back called Above Top Secret.
Yes. I was wondering if you drew your title from that.
Yeah, it was essentially the same concept. Above Top Secret meant the black programs. You know, I guess his name was Goodall or Good something. He talked about different programs that were classified above the top secret realm. Well, actually, there's another level, and it's called Above Black, or in the military, we called it the gray programs. So Above Black means gray program.
What is a gray? In other words, a black program implies secret, right?
A black program is what?
Is a secret budget. I think of a secret budget or something like that.
Yeah.
When I think of black.
Yeah, a black project is a project that is hidden from not only the public's view, but most of the government as well. And top secret is only hidden from, need to know basis, the public and to a certain degree, the government, but a lot of people in the government know about it because they have, you know, a need to know. Whereas a gray program, there are very, very, very few people who have a need to know and therefore don't know.
Would that include the nation's highest officials?
I speculate that certain presidents throughout the history since the first contact, and I don't know when the first contact was, but and we'll get into this in a little bit, but I feel that certain presidents probably have known about it, but only because their involvement in collateral type of things had to come into play. So I don't believe that the current president knows about it. No.
All right. You were an air policeman, is that correct?
Yeah, I was a security policeman, yeah.
Security policeman. Regular air policeman, as I remember, APs.
Yeah, actually they changed that, I think, in the early 60s or late 60s. Late 60s, I think, it was a security policeman now.
Security policeman,
yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay.
Dating myself.
Yeah.
And you were, for how long, a security policeman?
I went into the military in 1982, and I was a security policeman for 7 years, a little over 7 years. And there's quite a bit of history with this. There was some things that came into play that directed me towards the electronic security or electronic intelligence career field. I was stationed in Korea, and I had a friend there who was an ELINT-er. That's what we call him, the ELINT. And he suggested that I do it. And when I came up for a retraining at about 7.5 year mark, I decided to try for it. Actually, the retraining process started a little earlier, but I actually retrained in 7.5 years.
Well, that makes sense. In other words, you already had a security background, albeit a fairly normal one. I take it you
mm-hmm.
did normal jobs, security-type
yeah.
jobs. But that would still be, particularly after 7 years, the proper background to be considered for something higher.
Well, you know, actually, they don't really even look at that. I think they just look at your test scores and to make sure that you can, you know, do the job. But I do feel that there was, I mean, obviously because of my abilities and because of the history of the program, I felt that I was directed towards a certain career path. I also think that it perhaps went awry when I first went in. And I can't remember exactly what went on, but I know there was a bunch of hoopla with my paperwork when I first came in. And I was supposed to go into another career field, and I couldn't do it in the last minute. So
are you referring to when you first got in the service?
Exactly, when I first enlisted.
Okay.
So a lot of people have asked me, since the story has broke, why didn't the military or whoever was in charge of this, why didn't they direct you into that career field in the
first place, yeah.
Yeah. And I, for that, I have no answer, actually.
Well, I remember the recruiters. Now, the recruiters would, of course, give you a battery of tests and determine that you were qualified to go into the service, and then would give you a battery of tests to determine what you would best be suited for.
Well, actually, my test scores, I qualified for every job the Air Force had at the time. And so I was going into another career field, and I really can't remember what that career field was at the time, but I just wanted to go in the military. I didn't care, you know, actually specifically in the Air Force, because earlier on in my childhood, I knew an SR-71 pilot who I was really familiar with, and he very much was very encouraging to go into the military or go into the Air Force. So anyway, ever since I was a child, I wanted to go in the Air Force. So the paperwork got kind of messed up, and I did actually go into the security police career field. But then there were some influencing factors throughout my security police stay that led me to the electronic intelligence career field. And then it just kind of progressed from there.
Well, that is, in fact, how it happens, Dan. When I went in to the Air Force, specifically wanted to go into the Air Force, had a deep electronics background, and qualified in every way except for a little test they would give you regarding color blindness. I've got a slight bit of color blindness, and that ruled me out for electronics, so I ended up being a medic in the Air Force. So I'm well familiar with how it kind of gets screwed up at the beginning there. Thank you very much.
Yes, it does.
So anyway, security for 7 years, and where'd you serve? Korea, you said, and...
I was in Korea twice. I was in Montana, North Dakota, Nebraska. I was kind of in Holland, so I kind of went everywhere.
Okay. Then all of a sudden you've got a friend who encourages you to go into ELINT, you called it?
Yes, it's called ELINT, Electronic Intelligence.
Okay. That would normally mean to me crypto stuff, maybe being stationed at a listening post somewhere, decryption, that sort of thing.
It actually is a very expansive career field. You can do on actually a lot of things. The main description the Air Force gives the ELINT career field is the you analyze electromagnetic energy for its intelligence value. So,
right.
Of course, electromagnetic energy spans a whole realm of things. We're kind of a jack of all trades as far as electromagnetic energy goes.
All right. So you trained for that. How long did you spend retraining?
I believe the ELINT school is 3 months, something like that, in Goodfellow Air Force Base, Texas.
Okay.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
All right. It's a pretty big jump now from normal electronic intelligence work to the kind of stuff you said you were doing. How did that occur?
Well, I was going to attend a school in Maryland at the NSA headquarters at Fort Meade, and this was a continuation course in my electronic intelligence career field, and I was called by a captain when I got to the hotel there, and he identified himself as, I think, a training commander or something like that, and he said that I need to see you. Well, I said, sure. I was asking him, actually, if he wanted anybody else to come with me, you know, because there was another person there from my base. And he said, no, I just need to see you. And I thought that was kind of odd, because that typically doesn't happen. You know, a captain calling an enlisted person right when he first gets to a base, and, you know, you don't even know who he is, and he wants a private meeting with you.
What were you at this point, E4, E5?
At that point, I was in E5, yes.
E5, all right.
Yeah. And so I said, yeah, sure, no problem. And he gave me the directions to the gate. And he didn't even want to meet me at the school that I was going to, which was the FANX complex, which is down the road from the actual NSA compound.
Okay.
He didn't even want me to meet me there. He wanted to meet me at the actual NSA headquarters. And so that was kind of odd, too. But, okay, no problem. So I followed his directions and finally got to the entrance to the building that he told me about. And he met me there at the gate, and we checked in for some security clearance paperwork that hadn't arrived yet. And did a bunch of that stuff, and finally we decided that he had to escort me into the building because I didn't have my security clearances there yet. He escorted me into the building, and we went into his office. And his office is a little interesting to get into. It had a couple of security procedures that were a little high for already in a highly guarded place to begin with. So anyway, we got in there, and he proceeded to tell me that I was part of a genetic experiment. And in my DR, this was just totally out of the blue. I mean, it's like he's sharing the...
What in the world? You were part of a genetic experiment?
Well, by the time that it got to me and that my DNA was manipulated because of it, by the time it had gotten to me, it wasn't an experiment anymore. But he started with the experimental phase. He said that in 1960, let me back up a little bit further. He said that due to our contact with an alien species or alien entity in 1947. Now, I'll remind you that 1947 wasn't as popular as it is now, so that really didn't strike a bell with me until later on when all the Roswell stuff was breaking the news and all that.
Right. Remind me again, please, of what year we're in as he's telling you all this.
This was in 1992.
1992.
Yeah, early 92.
All right.
So anyway, he said that due to the contact, in concert with the government, the aliens were starting a genetic management, that's what they called it, genetic management experiments in 1960. And by 1963, it had been, I guess, got into the final phase of it, and they actually started to genetically manipulate human offspring. And for the reason of to be able to communicate with them intuitively. And now this, of course, I asked a lot of questions, and one of the questions I asked was why, you know, obviously. And he said, I really don't know why specifically. We have been told, and I have been told, that you're going to provide a worldwide communications link in the event that all electromagnetic energy is going to be completely eliminated in the future, at some future date. So, I just sat there, and, you know, of course, this is a lot to chew on.
Now, why? Yeah, it's a lot to chew on. Why you?
Well, it's just a random, very random. I mean, during the experimental phase, this is what it was explained to me. During the experimental phase, they actually abducted, they were abducting women to test their DNA for some sort of genetic predisposition or genetic type of compatibility.
So it's like you weren't being told everything, obviously.
Oh, right? I'm positive I wasn't told everything, and I really don't think that he knew everything either. I mean, I think he knew more than what he told me, but I don't think he knew everything, obviously. This whole thing, Art, is very, very, very compartmentalized.
So, I mean, in other words, it began in 1947, which...
Well, that contact, he said...
Began in 1947. Now,
because of the contact in 1947.
Right. I presume that, of course, was Roswell.
I can't say that for sure, but I presume as well.
Uh-huh. And that... I want to be straight on this. And that human women... first of all, that we had had contact, made some sort of deal or arrangement with this alien race or races, and that human women were abducted for genetic manipulation reasons. Is that correct?
Genetic compatibility tests.
Compatibility tests. Huh. All right. We'll hold it right there and take a break here at the bottom of the hour. My guest is Dan Sherman. The book he wrote is Above Black. And this should be a very, very interesting story. Intuitive communicator. Uh-huh. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.
Art Bell is talking to first-time callers at area code 702-727-1222. That's area code 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye. Here's Art.
Well, thank you. Once again, here I am. My guest is Dan Sherman, and he's authored a book called Above Black. And we're going to find out in a moment how he got into that program. Dan, we tell you?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome back. Dan, one part of this that people are going to have a hard time understanding is why somebody would be plucked from the beginning of a change of career in the Air Force, ELINT, electronic work, electromagnetic interception work, for something like this. Why do you think they would randomly, particularly randomly, choose you for this?
Well, they didn't choose anything. The actual genetic procedure that happened in, you know, before I was formed, so to speak, is what actually led me down that path. Now, let me explain that a little bit further.
Please.
As it was explained to me, there were many thousands of people who were genetically managed for this particular procedure. It's just that only a certain number of those people, obviously, went into the military. And I was just happened to be one of them.
So in other words, you had been genetically managed at some point in your life prior to going into the Air Force. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Actually, let me finish that, I guess. The genetic experimentation began in 1960. My mother had been... Or that's what he said anyway. He said my mother was abducted in, I can't remember the initial abduction. I think it was 1960 or 61, something like that. And then when the actual genetic manipulation or genetic management phase started in 1963, they actually took my mother again, and while I was in the womb, genetically managed my DNA.
How old are you now?
I'm 33. I was born in 64, and they said the genetic management happened early on in my conception.
So. All right, your mother was abducted in 1961, right?
Something like that, yeah, 66.
Okay. Is your mother still alive, Dan?
Yes, I knew that question was coming. That question always comes around. Yes, she is, actually. And I know the next question is, have you discussed this with you?
Right.
With her?
That's correct.
And I have not. And I've chosen not to because of, yes, I may find out from her that she has these memories. I may find out that she doesn't have these memories. Whether she does or she doesn't, it's not going to validate the story any more than it already is to me because I know what has happened. But
of course, if she does have the memories, it would validate the story to others.
That's true, and I'm more concerned about my relationship with my mother than trying to validate the story to others.
Well, I hear that.
Because what happens if I do tell her this, and, you know, she's a fairly conservative person, what if I do tell her this, discuss it with her, and she doesn't believe me, and then it creates a rift in the relationship? And believe me, I've already experienced that with family. So
right, many of us have. All right, so,
yeah.
But I mean, here you've written a book. She must be aware of the fact that you've written a book.
She knows that actually, she doesn't even know that it's out yet, but she knows that I'm writing a book about my military experiences.
Ah.
My mother is not the one or the type that's going to be listening to this type of stuff. She, at some point in the future, she may come across it because, you know, some friends or whatever. But I'll just have to deal with that at the time, I guess. But
okay,
I haven't broached the subject yet, though.
All right. Anyway, that's what they told you occurred, that your mother had been abducted and that you had been genetically manipulated in the womb. And then do you have any idea how many people were so manipulated?
Well, no, I was led to believe that it was a lot. I mean, not just a handful of people. And I'm assuming they played some sort of statistical roulette, so to speak, because in order for them to get people into the program, from the people that were genetically managed, and then actually out of those people, all the ones that go into the military, and then out of those ones that go in the military that happen to get into career fields that they can hold high-level security clearances and work on black projects around the gray project. Mm. I mean, you know, it's just a numbers game.
All right, and again, the purpose of this manipulation, you were told, was so that communication would continue with this alien race, even if other electromagnetic means all failed.
Well, no, that actually wasn't my impression. The impression that was left to me was that I would provide a worldwide communication link for our government so that our government can continue to operate, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But the aliens or the alien technology would allow me to do such, it would allow me to do it.
In other words, you had mental capabilities as a result of this genetic manipulation.
Exactly.
Or they knew you did or thought you did or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you aware of any of this ability before you sat down with this captain at NSA?
No.
In other words, you had no...
Not at all.
No hint that you could do any of this.
No. Uh-uh. I mean, I've been a fairly unusual person all my life, but nothing to that extent.
Okay. So he sat you down. I mean, your eyes must have gone wide. Your mother was abducted. You were genetically manipulated. And that's why we have you here. And then what? What did he say?
Well, it wasn't a lot. He didn't say a lot. I asked a couple questions about, one of the main ones I had was, am I part alien? Am I a complete human being?
I understand. And I would ask that, too.
And he did laugh at that. And he said, actually, I've been in the position to tell a few people this so far, and every single one of them have had the same question. And to alleviate your fears, if you have any, no, you're not any part of aliens. You're all human.
you're just manipulated.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a manipulated human.
Are
we all?
Well, I suppose. One way or the other. So then what?
Well, that was it in a nutshell. He just, he told me exactly what the background was, and he said that while I was there, I would be going through a school at night to uncover these abilities, and during the day, I'd be going to my regular school. So, of course, I had a long day every day.
Right.
And we finished the conversation. He escorted me back out of the building, and he wanted me to meet with him. Something having to do with my security clearances for the school. After they were in, we were going to meet again, and he was going to take me to the schoolhouse where I would be learning to uncover my abilities.
Okay. This was an NSA project.
Yes, I'm very convinced of that, obviously, because the captain worked in the NSA building and the school was at the NSA area. I don't know exactly where the school was because I never was told and I never saw when I was going there, but I'm assuming that, yes, it was an NSA
okay.
program.
What did you learn at the school? First of all, how long did you go to the school?
I went to the school as long as I went to the other school. It was approximately 2 months.
2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And what was this school all about? I mean, what did they have you doing?
Well, that's a hefty chapter in the book right there. It was interacting with a computer terminal. I guess that's the best way I can describe it.
Okay.
I would sit at the computer terminal at a computer screen, and I had headphones on, and my instructor would interface with me through the headphones, and I never saw my instructor.
Okay.
He would describe to me what I was supposed to do, and then he would leave me alone for like hours at a time, sometimes days at a time, until I had mastered the task that I was told to do. And it was a gradual process. First, I started with Well, let me back up. We had sine waves, or I had sine waves in front of me on the computer terminal.
Okay.
I say we because there was another guy that was going through the school at the same time at another terminal.
Sine waves.
Yeah.
Okay.
There were 10 boxes within the computer screen that I was looking at, and they were sort of like LED boxes. And there was a baseline that went through it, and then a sine wave that went, you know, it's like an oscilloscope, a sine wave that went, intersected a baseline.
So like an AC sine wave across a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A 360 degree sine wave.
All right.
My first task was to look at the first box, listen to the tone that was going in my earphones, and there was a constant tone in there.
Right.
And I was told to mentally hum the tone, not vocally, but mentally try to find that tone in your mind.
Understand?
And the premise was, as soon as I did find that tone, I would start to hone in on moving the line, moving the sine wave. Now, mind you, I wasn't touching the computer screen or anything. I mean, there was nothing between me and the computer screen.
All right, it was like a next generation biofeedback.
Yeah, that's a good description, Art.
Well, biofeedback is when they'll hook up to your heartbeat and respiration and so forth and so on,
mm-hmm.
and you can change it.
Exactly.
Except that in this case, you were not hardwired to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me that once you mentally matched the audio tone, you'd begin to move the sine wave. That is a kind of a biofeedback.
Well, it was actually a very, very momentous occasion because I could definitely sense when that happened. It was like something had fallen into place. And I call it, in the book, I call it clicking. I clicked on it. It wasn't a physical clicking, but it's the closest thing I can come to describing it.
Oh, okay.
And I must caution everybody to understand that this is not a tonal type of thing either. It's just that the tone that was going into my ears was the only way that they could begin my mental process to understand what was going on, and it was kind of like a gradual process, and it ended up with my mind clicking onto what it needed to click onto. It's a very, very difficult thing to describe.
And there would be 10 of these, and you would have to manipulate finally each one by clicking on it or coming in harmony with it or however you want to put it.
Exactly. And then we went from clicking on each one of them, and I had to not only click on it, but then I had to flatten it. And I call it flatten my lines. I had to flatten my lines. And flatten it to 0 degrees. And there was a little degree readout up in the right-hand corner that told me how flat it was getting in degrees.
Would you actually bring the sine wave down to the baseline?
Exactly, yeah.
All right.
And then the second box, I had to do it, and that was another tone that was put in my ear.
Okay.
And I listened to another tone, and then I would try to get to that one. And the first one took me a couple days, I think. The second one, a little bit shorter, and third. And by the time I was the 10th one, it was pretty simple. I could just, as soon as I clicked on it, it was done, basically.
Huh.
And then we went into series of combinations of lines being flattened at the same time.
Okay.
It was a gradual process.
All right. This makes sense to me. In other words, they were, in effect, training you in a mental process.
Training the muscle, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Was that the totality, or did you then begin to graduate on to other things?
Oh, no, I graduated on to other things.
Okay. All right, so we're up to the point where you have pretty well completed or mastered the computer portion of it, then what?
Well, the actual tones went away after a while. And I was told to, first we went into text. I had a little box we first went to numbers. We went to numbers, and I would be told a number in my earphones, and then there would be a certain combination of of lines being flattened, and I could sense these lines being flattened too, the intuitive part of it. And my mind could just, it could relate to what was going on, and it memorized what was going on. I mean, instantly. It wasn't like a normal memorization process where it was over and over and over and over. You know how we learn basically by rote.
Sure.
It wasn't like that. And then once we got up to about, I think it was up to 100, I actually knew what the combinations were. It's just like English, you know, if you know how to count to 100, basically you can count to anything, right?
Right.
So then I first learned numbers, and then I learned text. I would read text, and the lines would flatten in a certain combination. And it wasn't, I can't equate it to adjectives and adverbs and, you know, all that thing, all the structure of a sentence, but certain concepts, when concepts came across the screen, I could relate to them in the boxes. Again, it was a very, very difficult thing to explain.
No, but it's very intriguing because I can see how they would be leading you through a process, a mental process, mm-hmm. To develop something that is latent or an ability that they knew you had.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes sense.
I could sense, every day I can sense this flower unfolding. And it was no power of my own. I mean, all I had to do was sit there and look at all this stuff and take it in. And the ability would grow and grow and grow and leapfrog on itself. And it got to the point where I couldn't even control the growth of it. It was just exponential every day. And to the point where at the end, I would look at videos. They would show me videos of, like, children playing in the schoolyard and mm-hmm. Beach scenes and a lot of military scenes, too, rockets going up and things like that. And by that time, I could intuitively manipulate the lines to describe what was going on.
Okay. Okay, I think I'm with you. Stand by, Dan. You've got a good long break. Yeah, I think I'm with him, all right. So far, so good. I can understand, can't you, how they would train a mind. And that's exactly what they were doing, obviously, was training a mind to learn to communicate intuitively in a way that he had never done before. All right, that makes sense. Would our government want a way to continue to communicate even if electromagnetic communications had failed because of some sort of pulse? The answer to that is a firm yes. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
America Outdoors features the flawless delivery of host Lance Podolsky. That's 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
It is. And what have we got here? I'll tell you what we've got here. We've got Cusco, and it is the new Apurimac 3, Nature, Spirit, and Pride. By popular demand, the people at Higher Octave are extending the specials for all of you out there through November 15th. It's Cusco's new Apurimac 3 album, and here's the deal. Just $15.98 for a CD, or $9.98 for a cassette. Call 1-800-562-8283. And by the way, if you're one of the first 10 callers to place an order tonight, your album will be autographed by Cusco's own Michael Holm. Now, there is a second part of the deal. You can get a Apurimac 1, 2, and 3 for just $39.95. And when you order, you get an autographed poster of the Buffalo Spirit Warrior featured on the cover of a Apurimac 3. This beautiful box set poster is not available in stores, and the autographed poster is about to run out. And by the way, when you order option one, that autograph is only available to the first 10 people, callers, who place an order tonight. So there it is, both offers. Call now. This will expire on the 15th, November 15th. Call 1-800-562-8283. Let me give you that number again. 1-800-562-8283. It's Higher Octave and Cusco. We're having a substantial amount of rain in the desert tonight, and we are experiencing the first of a continuing line of storms coming in from California. And so there are certain things that are a little strange this evening with the rain. We don't get it frequently in the desert, and when we do, strange things occur. Back down to my guest, Dan Sherman. Dan, welcome back. Hello, Dan.
I'm here.
Okay. All right, Dan. So you went through all of this training to learn to communicate, or at that point, did you really know what you were training for?
Well, I was assuming that I was training for what they had told me about providing worldwide communication link. I was told also that I would be to, in order to keep my ability in practice, so to speak, or to keep it up to date, or to keep in practice, I would be communicating with an alien contact.
Okay. At what point did you begin to do that?
I began that in, well, I stopped the school, or I finished the school, and I went back to my base. And soon after that, I got orders to go to another base. And at that base is where, the first base after I got back from school, that's where I started to communicate.
What base was that?
Which base was what?
The base where you went, Dan.
That I can't say.
You can't say?
No, unfortunately. I mean, it's in my records, and everybody can, it's very accessible, but there are, and this goes back to the onion effect, in order to keep this thing under wraps, so to speak, what they do is they co-locate it with what you would call a black project. And they do this because if you release any gray information, you will probably, by extension, release some black information. And the release of black information is what they can and will prosecute you on, and thereby silencing you, at the same time not giving any credibility to the gray information.
Well, all right, then one might ask, how can you tell us what you have told us so far?
Because I've only told, in the book and on my interviews and everything, I'm only discussing the gray aspect of it. I don't discuss anything else that I did, and hopefully, cross my fingers, that I'm doing this correctly. In the event that, I mean, I say doing it correctly, I mean, I'm not releasing any information that they will come at me for. Because if they come at me for releasing the gray information, then that just validates the gray information. So, of course, they don't want to do that. And they're not going to do that.
All right.
See, the gray projects are wrapped around the black projects. Anybody who works on a gray project has to work on a black project as well. It's interchangeable. You cannot work on a gray project without also working on a co-located black project, which is completely separate from the gray project. They have, for all intents and purposes, they have nothing to do with one another.
Why? In other words, why, I guess I'm asking, must both aspects be present? Why couldn't they compartmentalize you into this gray project?
Well, it's a paperwork thing, or it's a organizational thing. Yeah, to you and me outside on the outside world, you know, we can't see any reason why they would do that. But in order to justify the budgets and to hide all the facility and everything from the inner workings of the government, they have to hide it behind a black project. Because a black project, they can say, they can brief a certain amount of people on it, you know, the Armed Service Committee, you know, the Armed Services congressional committees, you know, and the intelligence committees and things like that. They can brief people on the black project there,
mm-hmm.
and not have to brief them on the gray project.
All right. I assume that you went to Lackland Air Force Base for basic.
Mm-hmm.
You went to tech school,
mm-hmm.
went into security police, were there 7 years. You've told us you went to NSA, and that you went to a school at NSA. Then what prevents you from telling us what your first permanent base after that school was? In other words, what aspect of this makes that secret after telling us all?
Well, it has to do with associations. If I even discuss or even say, like I am now, that I worked on a black project, and during the same conversation I say that I was stationed at this particular base,
mm-hmm.
that is, you're associating one with the other, and that is classified.
Okay.
I know it seems minute and detail-oriented, but believe me, I have to stay as far away from prosecution as possible.
Well, I can appreciate that. All right, so...
And that's, incidentally, that's why the... Right now, anyway, at this present stage of the game, that's why the book isn't available in stores. We haven't got a distributor. We're only doing it through mail order and through the internet because I don't want to sign any contracts that I have to continue to have it available, because I don't know when the government's going to step on this and take it away from me, and then of course I'll be a breach of contracts and all this stuff. So I have to keep complete control of it. Now, at a later date, when I find that there's nothing going to happen, then we'll probably do that. But
Have you been visited yet?
By the government? No.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, I probably wouldn't be on your show if I had.
Okay. Why did you decide to write the book and tell all of this? I mean, we haven't told the whole story yet, but I mean, why even go public?
Well... That's something that I had to come to terms with over the past couple of years after I got out of the military. And a lot of people have asked me that. I'm going to be completely honest and say there are financial constraints involved with it. You know, I'm trying to put myself through school, and I know that it's a very, very marketable experience. I know that the world is searching for that type of information. And, you know, I don't have... This is not like a huge revelation where, you know, I have... pictures of aliens and all that stuff. My part of it was very, very compartmentalized. I have very limited knowledge as to the whole big picture. I'm very, very curious to find out the rest of the picture. I want to know the picture just as much as everybody else does. And if I bring my part of the picture out into the public and somebody else brings their picture out because, you know, they see that I've done it,
mm-hmm.
Maybe by default we'll start getting more of the pieces of the puzzle together.
All right. At Base X, wherever you were, you began communication not with other military people, apparently, but with aliens. Is that accurate?
You mean the intuitive communications part of it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I've only intuitively communicated with, well, other than the computer, which I have absolutely no idea how that happened, but yes, only two. Actually, I've had two alien contacts, one at my first base and one at the second base.
Did you have a handler? Did you have a contact at this base?
Yeah, I had a commander at each base, what I called my PPD commander.
PPD.
I had one, the one that at the NSA school that I went to, he obviously was my first one. And he, during one of our meetings, he said that I would be handed off to my next one. It could be either in person or vocally, but I would be handed off to the next one. And I wasn't to discuss with anybody else, obviously. So during when I got to my first contact base, I received a phone call from the first captain, and he told me that to hang up the phone and I would receive a call within about 30 seconds of my next commander, from my next commander.
Okay.
So I did, and I went down to meet him at the compound. I kind of figured that that's who it would be because it was a very small organization. And so I met him, and I had another one, too, at my next base.
And
those are the only people, incidentally, that I ever talked to or discussed with or had any knowledge of within the program.
All right. Here's something that I'm not quite grasping. If the objective of this program was to continue communications worldwide, in the event of, one would imagine, nuclear holocaust or EMP or whatever would prevent electromagnetic communication and continue communication, then why wouldn't they have you communicating with other genetically manipulated human beings as opposed to aliens?
I'm not so sure that that was the intent. I'm not so sure, actually, that we have that capability. I think, and due to my communications with them and the impressions that I had while I was communicating, I don't think that the ability is of us. I think it's of them, and they facilitate the ability. Because I could never, not to my knowledge anyway, I could never initiate a communication with them. They always initiated it with me.
Okay.
So I never got to the point where I thought that I could communicate with somebody else, you know, another human being. I never got that impression.
And yet, now, that was the stated goal, right, of the project, though.
Well, it was. Now, we're extrapolating here because they told me that I would be providing communication link worldwide, right? Well, I could be just the conduit.
In other words, they did not tell you with whom.
No. They said I would be providing a communication link. Now, I could be, if you will, the download site, so to speak.
Oh, okay.
They could be the satellite. I don't know.
I've got you. Okay. All right. You had two communications with alien beings.
I had two contacts. Alien contacts. I communicate with them many times, though.
All of it, though, intuitive. Never physical.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
Never.
What exactly can you talk about the nature of the communications?
Most of the communications was never, I don't think ever, actually, classified at the black level. The actual information, obviously, the mode of communication was classified at the gray level, but I was actually passed in the beginning. I would just be passed a series of numbers. Throughout the whole thing, I was always under the impression that I was always being tested and retested to make sure that my abilities were keeping up to date, so to speak. That was always my impression. I have no way of knowing that was the truth or not, but
you were passed a series of numbers.
Yeah, initially my communications had to do with numbers. I was just passed a series of numbers, and I would type them into a screen on the on my computer terminal wherever I worked at the time, and I had a computer terminal that I worked at all the time, and I would open up a screen in the background, and it would be a blank screen, by the way. You couldn't see anything when you typed, but I would type the impressions that I got, or the intuitive communications that I got, and then I would do a series of keystrokes, and it would send the message that I had just typed off somewhere, and I had no idea where it went, but I'm assuming it went to NSA.
Okay. So then you had no idea really what was being said to you.
Well, initially, the number strings were just number strings to me. I mean, they didn't mean anything to me, obviously. Maybe it was some sort of code. Maybe they were just testing my ability to pass numbers. I don't know.
All right.
But there was a structure to the messages. I would initially get what I would call a preamble, and this was it began with three numbers, which was 118. That would always be there, all the time, every time that I communicated, that they communicated with me. I would type 118 and then a slash, and then usually a five, always. I can't remember never having it this way, but I would type a five-digit number after that, and I always called that the zip code. You know, he was sending me the zip code, and then a slash, and then the ideas would come, and I would type in the ideas, and they were separated. Each idea or intuition or communication would be separated by a slight pause, and I would always put a slash there.
Okay.
The total communication would last anywhere from 30 to 45 seconds, sometimes even shorter.
All right. Ideas expressed in numbers, or ideas expressed as you and I are expressing them now?
I analogize that by saying it's very difficult, or it's as difficult to explain intuitive communications or the actual communication and how it formed my mind and how I received it. It's the same analogy that you would say that how do you explain a color to somebody who was born without eyes? You can't do it. You know, they don't even have any concept as to...
All right. Well, then let me try this angle of attack.
It wasn't a language, Art.
Were you typing letters?
No. My interpretation of the communication was always in English. I mean, you know,
give me an example. Give us all an example.
An example of the numbers?
No. No, of the ideas.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you're asking. Of course, you know, an idea is a very ambiguous concept. You know, you really can't explain an idea. The explanation of it is always in a language, correct? I mean,
yes.
If I were to express to you
it would
an
be
idea,
in words, yes.
Yes, they would be in words, whether that be in English or Mexican or whatever. You know, you would describe it in a word or a language. My challenge all the time was to receive this intuitive communications and then translate that communication into the language of us, you know, the English language, and put it into the screen. Now, I would receive...
Okay, well, if you did that for them, then you should be able to do it for us.
Exactly, and I can. Initially, they were numbers, so that's obviously very, very easy to understand. Then it started to go into... I would be passed launch data. Some, like a Chinese launch would happen, and I would be passed that. I would be passed just a lot of military type of information, military movements, some things I really didn't understand what they were, like temperature type of stuff throughout the world, you know, on the other side of the world, and I would be passed latitude, longitudes that corresponded to them.
Hmm.
Just a whole hodgepodge of information. Now, at the end, I was passed abduction data, which is what precipitated my getting out, and that's the whole story there, too.
How long were you in the military total?
12, little over 12 and a half years.
12 and a half years. All right. Hold on, Dan. Dan Sherman is my guest. He was a facilitator, a communicator, an intuitive receiver for who? This is Coast to Coast AM.
Kingdom of Nye. Dial area code 702-727-8499. That's area code 702-727-8499. Please limit faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, I test radios as a hobby. I should enter the weird people contest for Strange Universe or something, huh? I really do that. It is a great hobby of mine and has been for years, so it makes it very, very easy for me to tell you precisely what I know to be true about the Sanjin ATS-909. It is simply the best radio you can buy for the money.
Ah.
That's right. All right. 12 and a half years is a very odd time to get out of the military. I was in the Air Force, and I faced a decision, as everybody does, at the four-year mark. Do you stay in, or do you get out? And I made the decision to get out, went back overseas again as a civilian. Dan, on the other hand, was in for 12 and one-half years. Now, normally somebody with that much time invested is going to stay in for 20, try and get their 20 years. But you did not do that. You got out after 12 and a half. How come?
Well, it was directly related to the project. At the second base that I was receiving communications, I started to receive abduction data, what I thought to be abduction data, and it was pretty readily apparent to me. Now, obviously, I don't know what was going on to precipitate the abduction data. I don't know if it was actually happening or not, but I was being receiving stuff that seemed like it was abduction data.
Can you give us any sort of concept of how this came to you? In other words, were you getting details of when there would be an abduction, or when one had occurred, the results of one? What kind of info?
Actually, it was more in the results category. I would receive a lat long, latitude, longitude, a time, and the disturbing ones were, and let me explain a little bit about the communication itself. I've kind of likened it to a fabric or a tapestry. The communications was very, very elaborate. They were very deep in its structure, or not in its structure, but in its feel, so to speak. And I could sense, not necessarily my alien contact's pain. It wasn't pain coming from them, but I could sense pain surrounding the actual communication. And now these were my translations of what they sent, but mm-hmm. I was receiving things like potentiality for recall, and it had a range that would be, I would report.
What do you think they meant by that, potentiality for recall?
Well, I just assumed that they would always send a number after it, and it appeared that the number would be anywhere between 1 and 100 because of the actual numbers that I was receiving.
Okay.
And I just equated it to the fact that this was what the chances of the recall of the actual abduction would be.
Oh, I see. You mean of the abductee recalling
exactly.
Okay, I've got you.
So I would receive potentiality for recall and then a number, and it was usually a high number. So I pretty much thought that the recall potentiality wasn't real likely.
In other words, the lower the number, the more likely.
Exactly. That's what I assumed
over
the time that I was receiving these. Another heading would be residual pain levels, which was very, very difficult for me to stomach. And these were actually usually in the mid, like in the 40s, 30s, and 50s, somewhere around there. Nerve response, I would receive that. I really didn't exactly know what that meant, but that was my translation of it. And also body normalization factor. And I really didn't exactly know what that meant either, but that was my translation.
Body normalization factor. Huh.
So anyway, these communications were really, really disturbing for me. You know, I'm a human, and I have emotions and I have feelings, and I sense that this was completely wrong, just downright wrong.
Did you ever get any feedback from the people that you sent this information to by computer?
I would receive a couple of emails from my commander every once in a while, but it really had nothing to do with the actual communications. You know, my reporting of the intuitive communications.
Right.
And that's what you mean, right?
That is what I mean, yes.
No, I never received any feedback from it. I was going to say something.
Was your military career otherwise undisturbed? When you left the military, you left as an E-what?
E-7.
E-7?
Or excuse me, E-6. I'm sorry.
E-6.
I was shooting for E-7, but I left it as an E-6.
Okay. That's what I meant. In other words, did your work in this area cross in any way to the other work you were doing? Did you advance at a faster rate? Did you get any special privilege?
No.
No.
No, not because of the gray project, no. A lot of things that... I was kind of in an interesting career field and interesting jobs whereby I was treated fairly well, but not because of the Gray Project, but because of other lesser classified projects. Mm. I'd kind of like to go back to the onion effect.
Sure.
And try to get people to understand why it's very, very difficult to come out with a story like this. The Gray Project is hidden behind the Black Project. A Black Project is hidden behind top secret and code word and compartmental type of things. And then it just goes right on down the line. When you pass by a base, when you drive by a base, you see, you know, planes or radar dishes or whatever. These are what you can readily see with your eyes. That's an unclassified mission. Whatever it is that you see, that's unclassified information, obviously, because they can't hide visual things.
Right.
And then you step up into confidential and for official use only, whatever you want to call it. And then you would go to secret and then top secret and then black and then gray. When you have a gray project, you have to have the black project surrounding it, because that is what actually protects the gray project from being found out by government officials and anybody who is doing any type of snooping around in that particular location, the base or the unit or whatever. So there's a hierarchy of information. And if you do release any gray information, and just locations, like you were talking about, Art, just locations, if I mention a location and the word black in the same sentence or in the same ideas, that is release of government classified information.
Mm-hmm. So you've got to dance very carefully.
Very, very carefully. And it's readily apparent in the book, too. I only speak about particular things having to do with the Gray Project. And I can't talk about bases. I don't mention any bases. But or anybody can go to my military records and find out where I've been stationed. And I even have a copy of my orders in there that sent me from what I call PPD base number one to PPD base number two. And on those orders, there are very, very, very revealing information but yet I've X'd out the things that are not accessible.
Well, you've got a DD-214, everybody does,
exactly.
Right? At the end?
Yeah.
Did you publish part of that?
No, I haven't published my DD-214.
Didn't publish, all right.
But you're right, it is. Anybody can pick it up. And also the reason why I got out, I mentioned the abduction scenarios. That is what precipitated me trying to get out of the military. I tried to get out through what I call my unclassified, so to speak, chain of command. And my career field, my electronic intelligence career field, was very short manned, and of course I couldn't get out. They had a shortage or a critical...
I understand, a critical career field,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get out under normal circumstances. So I asked my grade commander if I could get out, you know, just an off chance that I had control over that situation.
Right.
And he said that there would be no way that I could get out because my career field was critically manned and so on and so forth, just like what the other commanders had told me. But this was done over email in about a 2 or 3 hour period of time, and obviously he couldn't go through the paperwork necessary to find out that I couldn't get out, right? So he sent back an email message saying, no, you're critically manned and all that stuff. Well, I sent back a message saying, well, I'm going to be getting out in November of 97 anyway, which I would have gotten out this month with my normal enlistment. And he sent back an email message saying, you're not going to get out then either. And that's what really set me off. I was like, what?
That you're not going to get out when?
Period. I'm not getting out.
You're not getting out, period.
Well, he said, you're not going to get out at your regular enlistment. Or your regular enlistment period, you know, when it's up. And I thought, how in the world can he do that? I mean, I don't understand. How can somebody do that? I just don't know the logistics of. I mean, obviously they can do a lot of things during war and all that stuff. They can extend your enlistment and all that. But I just didn't understand. Well, that got me very, very upset. So I just took drastic measures. What I feel were drastic measures, anyway.
Which were what?
Well, and again, that's a legal issue that I can't really get into. But it's a way that the military has to get people out. And I did it through my unclassified chain of command. And my classified chain of command, I know that they tried to intercede and stop it, but they couldn't because of the nature of my discharge, why I was getting out. So it was very interesting. It was very tense moments, a very tense couple months where I was back and forth as to whether I was getting out. And it was just like a point of no return.
And you can't tell us the nature of your discharge?
Well, it's in my DD-214, so...
Did you make something up?
That I can't discuss.
All right.
I'm sorry if I'm being a little bit
evasive.
Here, but yeah. And again, it's because in this particular case, it has nothing to do with classification. It has to do with legal matters.
Okay. So you got out. Prior to your getting out, other than abduction information, you mentioned something in here about earth change information, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What did you get? What was that about?
I was able to contact or communicate with my alien contacts on another level as well. Now, I say another level. I was able to communicate with them on the regular level in an informal way. It's just that we never did it on that level. We always did it on another level. And what I mean by level is it's sort of like a different communication plane in the intuitive categories. It's very, very difficult to equate to concepts that we understand. But I actually stumbled upon this quite by accident. And I was able to, the bottom line is I was able to informally communicate with my alien contacts, which, by the way, I had names for. I didn't name them. I didn't call them the names, but I had names for myself. The first one I named Spock, and the second one I named Bones. So I was able to communicate with them on a little bit more informal basis.
This was still while you were in the military or after?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right.
As soon as I got out of the military, actually, as soon as I was relieved of duty debriefed, so to speak, I never received any communication. I never received any from my alien contacts or from my commander. So I was completely dropped off the face of the earth, so to speak.
Huh. All right. What can you tell us about the nature of the informal communication?
The informal?
Yep.
Getting back to what you had just mentioned, I did ask one time, because I was kind of curious about the future of the Project Preserve Destiny and why I was doing it and if I could get a little bit more information from them. And every time I brought Preserve Destiny up, they always, and this was actually my second one, which was Bones, he always signed off and wouldn't discuss it. One time, and I can't remember how we got in or how I asked it or how the discussion started, but he did say that the Earth is in its very early formative stages and that we could expect a lot of different changes. And that was all that I got out of it as far as what the future of Preserved Destiny is and what's going to precipitate the electromagnetic communication loss, if it's going to happen at all, which, you know, maybe I was just fed that as the cover story for the project, and you know, maybe that wasn't it. Who knows? But, you know, let's look at what are the things that could knock out electromagnetic communications. Asteroid strike.
War.
Nuclear
detonation.
Yeah, nuclear war.
Sure.
But, you know, I thought about that. I gave that a lot of thought, actually. I read a lot of books, and I tried to educate myself on it. But I came to the conclusion that if this were true and that we were doing it to provide the worldwide communication link, and we started it back in 1960, how could they have the knowledge that we were going to get into a nuclear war at a certain time in the future?
Well, they wouldn't.
Yeah.
So it might be a what-if scenario, or...
Or it might be something that could be predicted in 1960 if you had the technology to predict it.
Or it might be something like one of my guests suggested, like Greg Braden, who is suggesting that the magnetic field of the Earth has decreased exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
While the Schumann resonance frequency has been increasing, and there will come a time, he says, when we will not have electromagnetics as we are into it, or a magnetic field as we now understand it, and that would, of course, halt all communication.
Yeah.
And he claims there are numbers to substantiate that position. So I'm not saying that's it.
I wasn't familiar with that, but yeah, there's so many scenarios that people have discussed and you know, been bantered about, you know, pole shifting, and, you know, there's all kinds of things that can knock the electromagnetic communications out of whack. But that was one of the things that I discussed with them. I discussed some other things like time. I've always been interested in time and the concept of time ever since I was a kid. And, of course, when this opportunity arose, I tried to bring it up as much as possible to try to learn a little bit more about it. But whenever I discussed time or asked a question about time, and we actually got into a question-answer session on it, I really was very, very inundated with information. I could not understand what they were talking about when they were talking about time. When it came to their mode of travel, I talked about that a little bit, and one of the things that I remember him saying is that he couldn't go backward and forward in time because time is a relative thing, and in order to go forward or backward, you'd have to have a fixed point, and you don't have a fixed point in time.
All right, Dan, hold it right there.
Sure.
When we come back, we're going to take calls. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
It's the
To talk with Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM from outside the U.S., first dial your access numbers to the USA. Then dial 1-800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
It is, and that's me. And my guest is Dan Sherman with quite a story, and I'll try and summarize it in a moment and then allow you to ask questions. Now, I will try and summarize what we've got. Dan Sherman is with us. He was a military policeman, Air Force Security Police, for 7 years or so, and at that time was approached by somebody at NSA after a career field change to electronic intelligence at that 7 year point. And he was trained at a special facility at NSA in a very, very interesting way. It is the most interesting part of his story, I believe, to communicate intuitively. He was, they sat him down in front of a computer screen, which had 10 little boxes in it with a flat line and then a sine wave traversing that flat line. And without any connection, bio connection, to Dan, he finally was able to learn to, in effect, connect with these frequencies. He would hear a tone and learn to flatten that line. And this was a method they used, after picking him, to teach him to, in effect, communicate with others. In this case, he says, aliens. Now, the reason he was picked for all of this was he was in the military, and his mother had been abducted in 1960 or 61, if I'm tracking this properly. And he is himself a genetic experiment. Not sure if experiment is the right word. Would that be the right word, Dan? Experiment? Is that what you think you are?
No, actually the experimentation phase had ended. I'm a genetically managed product of the experiment.
And the reason for all of this was global communications in case electromagnetic communication would fail for whatever reason you can imagine that might occur.
Now, I caution your listeners, that is what I was told. That's not necessarily the truth, as we all know with the military.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go over one thing that you said. It seemed like you had equated the tone to the frequency in the sine wave, and there was actually, the sine wave had absolutely no frequency. It's the tones in my earphones that I had to mentally hum that had to do with tones. The frequency, there was no frequency on the sine wave. So the sine wave is just a 180-degree sine wave, just a straight tone, so to speak.
All right.
All righty.
What about since you've been out of the military now for how long?
I've been out since April of 95.
April of 95. What are you doing now aside from writing this book?
Well, I'm attempting to go to school. I want to get a computer science degree, finish school.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I would like to allow the audience to ask you some questions. There are elements of your story, Dan, I'll tell you up front, that seem very logical, and I understand how they would proceed with this kind of training, and there are elements of your story, perhaps because you can't tell us the whole story, that are hard to buy.
Yeah, I understand that. And that was one of the difficulties in coming out with the story. And of course, that's what the military likes, is that you can't get credibility sometimes because you have to hide some of the other things. And it just helps them out, that's all.
All right, let's see what the audience has to say.
One of your listeners emailed me and asked me if I had a honorable discharge, and I'd like to answer that question. Yes, it was an honorable discharge.
It was honorable.
Yes.
All right. But again, you can't really reveal the nature.
No, because of the switchback of, you know, no.
Okay.
If you need to know, just get my DD-2 form.
214.
Yeah, 214, and you'll know.
All right. First time caller line. You're on the air with Dan Sherman. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Virginia, and I'm in British Columbia.
Okay.
And the question that I have for Dan is, I want to know what his dream state is like now. Is he still receiving communications through his dreams?
Well, did he ever receive them through
that
his dreams?
That would be a good way to start.
Okay. All right.
Virginia, I didn't, actually. I never received communications via dreams, but it's interesting that you should bring that up, because right after, or during and right after I was going through school and I was awakening this ability, I was having incredibly lucid dreams, more so than I've ever had. And it was very interesting. I explain it in the book, but it was a dream within a dream. I would be dreaming that I was dreaming in reality within my dream, and I would wake up and wonder, okay, now is this part of my dream? Because my dreams are so lucid, parts of it were so lucid that I would think that I was still awake. It was very, very confusing, and I had never gone through that prior to that date. And I'd say about 2 or 3 months after I got out of the school, they subsided and it didn't happen anymore.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Repeat that, please.
I say this is a really good thing, because I've been through this myself, and that's what I was wanting to know, because that I do have periods of time where it just turns off and I don't seem to get any kind of communication whatsoever, and makes you wonder and question what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to let you know you're not the only one out there.
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier there were perhaps thousands and even more so of people who were genetically managed for this particular procedure. Now, the PPD aspect of it was during those years, so I was told, and actually the experiment or the...
Dan, what does PPD stand for?
Oh, Project Preserve Destiny.
Okay.
So I always refer to the program as PPD.
What do you think Preserve Destiny meant?
Well, some military projects the name of it have to do with the outcome, and some of them don't. Who knows? You know, because of what they told me, maybe the particular event in the future has to do with preserving our future, so to speak, or our destiny. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Only time will tell, I guess.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Hello, this is Dan in Virginia.
Yes, sir.
I have about three quick questions. Dan, do you have any recollection of being abducted yourself? This is my first question.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is, have you been checked for implants? Art Bell did have, if I'm not mistaken, Art, I think he had some pictures of some tiny implants on your website a year ago.
Yep, they're probably still there.
And that's the second part. And the third part, are you sure you were communicating with aliens?
That's a very good point. Very good point. All right. In order, then, have you ever been abducted?
No, I haven't. Or not to my recollection, anyway.
All right.
And, of course, that would probably answer the second question. I don't believe I have any of that type of paraphernalia hanging around the body.
Yeah.
I don't have any unusual marks or scars or anything like that.
All right.
But I really don't have any memory of being abducted. I think the only time I've been abducted is when I was in the womb, so I obviously wouldn't have any memory of that. And am I sure, am I sure that I was communicating with aliens? That question has been asked to me many times, and the only answer that I can have is, no, I'm not sure, obviously. I was communicating with something, but the nature of the communications was such that I had no question that it was not of human intelligence. But do I know that for sure? No. Do I know that it wasn't artificial intelligence of some sort? No, I don't know. But again, the feel and the interesting nature and just the whole aspect of the communication was just so utterly fascinating and abstract and completely different than how we even think. You know, they weren't even thinking the way we think in complex or in terms of structure and sentence and, you know, all that stuff. It's just completely different, completely different feel. So answer the question, I don't think so. I think I was communicating with an alien species of some sort.
All right, and for the audience that tuned in late, Dan left the military because he began to get very morally conflicted with the information he was receiving, which a great deal of which apparently had to do with abductions, specifics about abductions, the chances of the person recalling they had been abducted, the pain levels they had endured, that sort of thing. And I guess you began to get conflicted with that morally.
I would like to clarify on that. That is what led me to start the process of trying to get out, you know, via methods of regular, you know, early out or whatever.
Sure.
But what I think I would probably still be in today if I hadn't received that message saying you're not going to get out, period. That is what really, I think it started the revengeful or the vengeful side of me that said, okay, I am going to get out,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going to stop me, that type of thing. So to clarify on that, I probably would still be in today if I hadn't got mad about that particular event.
Learning. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Where are you, please?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, all right.
By the way, Art, fantastic program that you had. One of your affiliates out here just picked you up, and I got to compliment you. It's a heck of a show. I have a question for Dan. Dan, can you elaborate once again on the pain levels? Were these on specific pre-chosen subjects, or were you just at random trying to determine pain levels? Can you elaborate on that?
All right, now, that's a good question. You would receive, you said, messages that would be inevitably preceded by the numbers 118, then what you called a zip code, and then, in effect, the body of the message.
Mm-hmm.
So, was that true with respect to these messages about abduction?
Yeah, I would receive the preamble, which would include my number and the zip code, so to speak. And then I would, in the abduction scenarios, I would receive times, and I really didn't know what they correlated to, the times, times and dates, actually. Also, I would receive a latitude and longitude, which a couple of times I did look up. Actually, about three times I did look up to see where they were. Then, of course, I'd get these different categories, you know, potentiality for recall and all those, and I would receive a number that would precede that number, and not actually precede, but go after that number, or actually after the category, and it would be anywhere between 1 and 100. And that was it. I didn't know what type of, you know, I didn't know if these subjects were being pre-selected for whatever reason. You know, I had no idea. That was all hidden from me or not told to me.
Okay. So in a lot of ways, Dan, in this project, you were actually a kind of a low-level operative. In other words, you had an ability through a genetic change that had been accomplished during your mother's abduction, and you happened to be in the military, so they tapped you on the shoulder, but you really weren't in on the full picture of things.
Oh,
you were just
no.
Yeah, no, you were just someone they were using. You were a conduit.
Exactly. I was indispensable in as much as I have the ability. But I was just the conduit.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Where are you?
I'm in Bozeman, Montana.
Oh, okay.
And my name's Scott.
Okay, Scott, go ahead.
Dan, I have a couple of questions for you here. First of all, what was your motive for participating in this, in these classes after you found out that you had been genetically
manipulated,
altered?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want me to answer that one first?
Sure,
I had absolutely no motive. I had no choice. you know, when you're in the military and a captain tells you that this is what's going to go on, that's what's going to go on. You know, there's no autonomy in the decision-making process.
Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah, I can understand that part of it, but...
And also, again, Scott, if somebody were to tell you that, and they were telling you that you're an integral part of this project and that aliens exist and, you know, all this information came at you all at once, wouldn't you be kind of wide-eyed and say, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, let's go for it.
I definitely would.
It was a very, very adventuresome time.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally enamored by the whole thing after getting over the shock of the actual information itself. But, you know, this had validated every person's childhood dream of actually there's life elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, or maybe their nightmare, too, though.
Well,
because,
that's true.
First of all, the morality of it, they've kidnapped your mother, genetically altered her, and directed your life to be in the military. They didn't genetically alter her.
You know, that's a good point. He said, I'd be angry. They did abduct your own mother. Mm-hmm. They genetically altered you. And now they're using you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that would, as a caller just said, I think that would produce...
Well, that wasn't my immediate thoughts. My immediate thoughts were, wow, this is pretty cool.
That's fair. I believe.
But over time, you're right, I did think about all that stuff. But to also, you probably don't know the whole story, obviously, but I was actually an only child, and my mother was told that she would never have children, period, because of an accident that happened when she was very small.
Uh-huh.
So I firmly believe that it was probably because of their manipulation and their doctoring, so to speak, or whatever, that I actually was carried to term. So maybe I could attribute my life to them. I don't know. You know, that's something that is, you can't prove, obviously, and you don't know for sure. But, you know, the doctors said that I was basically a miracle baby. There was just no way she was going to carry anything to term.
Interesting. Caller?
And indeed, she did have several miscarriages.
Right. Yeah, actually, I just have one more question here. Now, you say that the government contact with aliens using alien technology to control people to be able to contact throughout the world isn't classified. But there's certain other aspects of your story that are classified.
No,
it'd be a lot less of a revelation than that our government is working directly with aliens.
He raises a good point. The baseline of your story itself seems to me it would be classified so black that for you to tell it, they would chew you up and spit you out, Dan.
No, see, the thing is, first off, Project Preserve Destiny is a relatively new, or I guess the actual communication phase of the people, you know, when they're actually recruiting the people and training them. That has just recently started. I mean, I was probably one of the first PPD, you know, the people that have the abilities to have it revealed to them.
Well, that makes sense with regard to your age and
exactly when
you went into the military. Hold on, Dan. We'll pick up on this when we come back. Dan Sherman is my guest. And there's a couple ways of looking at this story. One is that it's absolutely true, and he's just telling it the way it was, and that's why we don't have all the details. And the other is that he's weaving a great tale. If he is, it's a good one. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Well,
hosts a national, international all-night radio talk show and does so from Brum, Nevada. I'll give you a hint. The show is called Coast to Coast AM, the largest, fastest-growing all-night radio program in the world.
And the host's name, Art Bell. Yes, I know him well, for he is I. Dreamland is an area in Nevada. Dreamland is also a radio show which comes from Nevada. I know because I'm Art Bell, host of Dreamland, the radio show, not the place. On Dreamland, we talk about strange and unusual things. Some might even call them weird. Join me right here for Dreamland.
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, dial Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am. Very interesting. My guest is Dan Sherman. And I find as I listen to the interview progress that I have, that I go back and forth. At one point I'm thinking, you know, I'm not buying this. But then there's other points where I am buying it. There's one thing we know for sure, and that is that there have been abductions, because I have talked with some of the world's experts in these areas. And there have been documented cases of abduction that are simply beyond question with regard to proof. Bud Hopkins, of course, has documented very well one that occurred in New York City. That was documented by endless numbers of witnesses, and there have been implants removed. And so it would appear that there is substantial evidence for the fact that there were and are abductions going on. Now, if our government was aware of this and was in communication with beings regarding these, then what Dan did in the military might certainly make sense. But there are other aspects of the story, and frankly, I think it's because he cannot or will not tell us, he says cannot tell us, some aspects of corroborating evidence, for example, where he was stationed, though all of this is available on his DD-214. So I find myself wavering back and forth, and I suspect I'm a lot like the rest of the audience. More questions for Dan in a moment.
Are you?
Dan's book is called Above Black, and I want to give him a chance to plug the book here or a way for you to get the book. I take it, Dan, that all of this is laid out very carefully in your book, right?
Yes, it is, Art.
All right. How do they get your book? You said it is not published, so they can't go to their local bookstore and get it. Yet.
No, not yet. And that probably won't occur until I feel that we're out of the gray area.
All right. What is the 800 number?
The 800 number is 888-240-1825. Again, 888-240-1825. And you can also reach it right now on Art's page.
Right, we've got a as a matter of fact, a link to your website. And you would just go to www.artbell.com, and go down to the guest area. You will see Dan Sherman's name there. Just click on that link, and you'll go over to his web page.
And we will also have the address of aboveblack.com up and running here in a little bit. So.
Okay. All right. Here's a question for you from Bangor, Maine. Art, how did the government know that Dan's mom was abducted?
Well, this is obviously something that it was in concert with the alien species and us or our government. You know, I don't know the exact channels by which they kept that information or communicated that information to one another. I have no idea.
Okay.
But it was obviously in concert with one another, so they would absolutely know, you know, what the names were.
It's true. If there was a deal that had been cut between some alien race and our government, there are many who believe that, then that would be the kind of information that was transferred, of course.
Sure.
And you apparently were the conduit for their half of the information. There must have been others like you.
Oh, yeah.
Was he ever given a thought picture of what the physical appearance of the alien intelligence was?
Never. You mean the physical appearance of the aliens?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, I never received that. My impression of the physical appearance of aliens is just like everybody else's, you know,
okay.
The pop culture
sure.
icon of it.
All right. How did he record the contents of these communications? Well, you've answered that. You recorded to a computer screen to email that went to whoever was controlling you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
I don't think it went to my PPT commander. I thought it went probably back to the NSA headquarters somewhere.
Okay. Did you keep any independent records?
No, I didn't. You know, when you're in some sort of environment like that. Well, first off, they would have known if I was bringing stuff in and out, you know, written down or otherwise. But, you know, it never occurred to me that I would ever come forward with this type of experience or my experience. It never occurred to me. So I had no incentive to do that. And even if I did write it down, it's still uncorroborated evidence.
That's so right.
I could have done that right now. I could have just went to my typewriter and typed it all out and said, oh, yeah, I wrote this down at that time. I mean,
okay.
it means nothing.
All right, fine.
And I'd like to go back to something you said earlier, Art, about is he making it up or not. You know, if I was making up this story, I would have a lot more answers. A lot more answers, and I would have more elaborate answers, and I would have more fascinating answers, and, you know...
That's one of the reasons that I'm hanging in with you, Dan, because
I wish I had all the answers. It would be a very, very, a much more fascinating story.
All right. Let's go back for a second to the classification factor.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain aspects of your story that you cannot reveal because you say they would in effect violate the law. For you to be telling us this story and then give us specifics like the base you were at or whatever when you were getting a certain communication, that would absolutely violate the law and you'd go to jail or worse, whatever.
Well, yeah, I cannot associate anything that I did in the black world. Nothing. And I would like to address that a little bit more, I guess, because it is a very hard concept to understand. The Gray Projects are, in essence, not classified officially, because when you classify something, you validate it in some sort of record, some sort of database somewhere. You have to validate it if it's classified, if it's got a name to it. And they did do that. I was told that they did do that. In previous years, I don't know exactly what the timeline is, but in PPD, they actually went to the system of the onion layer, and they co-located every single mission aspect with a black project, and that is how they hit it. There are no I never signed one piece of paperwork having to do with Gray Projects. I never saw one written down name of the project. I was just told that it was called Preserve Destiny.
Okay.
I never received any communication having to do with the alien project. Nothing.
Dan, did you see the movie Contact?
I did.
Okay, good. Good. Finally. somebody else's on. Do you remember the very end of the movie where they were questioning
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster about the entire experience she had had.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying things like, do you have one shred of proof, anything tangible whatsoever, that could help us believe your story?
Mm-hmm. And guess what her answer was?
I know what her answer was. I'm wondering what yours is.
It's a very, very good correlation to it. And, of course, they touched on the, I think, a lot in the spiritual aspect of it, equating it to it, and faith and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And in essence, that is what I'm going through with the public and who I talk to. One guy I talked to, he's a publisher of he's got a catalog of interesting books like this, and he says, "Oh, you're just part of the crowd coming out with something that you can't prove. Why'd you even come out with this if you can't prove it?" I said, "You know, if we took that line of thought, and we didn't have any proof of anything, and so those people don't come out with their story, that's just ridiculous. It's really ridiculous to think that. I mean, you have to get some information out so that you can start putting pieces of the puzzle together. Yes, you're going to get bogus information. I mean, that just goes without saying. But that's not to say that nobody should come forward with their stories."
Fair enough.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
But again, to specifically cause you to answer that question, do you have one shred of physical evidence regarding your story?
Not one shred of physical evidence.
Okay. So, in other words, you are asking us to take on faith what you're saying.
You know, that is exactly what you have to do. And... but my background and the places that I've that I have been stationed at,
uh-huh.
They are suspect locations for interesting things. I mean, I guess you just have to put two and two together and hopefully get five somehow, some way.
If I was a military intelligence guy, and all of this was true, and I heard Dan Sherman on the radio saying what he had said and only holding back the bases where he had been, of course I have no way of knowing what else you're holding back,
mm-hmm.
I would think it would be time for the men in black to come and get Dan and dip him in something until he decided not to talk anymore.
Well, that's...
Or couldn't talk anymore.
You know, I constantly, every single day, think of that. I really do. And my wife thinks about it even more. But I don't think that should be something that stops me from coming out because, and this goes back to a little bit what I was saying earlier, I think I'm the first person that has actually gotten out of the military in Preserved Destiny. So I'm probably the first opportunity that anybody has had to speak of it, you know, not being in the military anymore.
How much of the story that you have told this morning, let me rephrase that. How much are you what percentage of the story are you unable to tell?
Well, actually, the stuff that relates to the story or to the gray aspect of it, it's not much. I mean, because the black projects that I worked with, had nothing to do with the Gray Projects. Nothing. Absolutely no correlation whatsoever. And in actuality, there were people working around me.
All right, when you say, so the audience will understand, that you worked in a black project, that would be, let's pick one out of the air, all right? You worked, let's say, on the stealth fighter project. I'm just picking one out of the air here.
Sure.
In other words, a real military black project.
Yeah.
The stealth would have been in that category. So you worked in some kind of black project like that, totally unrelated to the gray area project, which we're talking about tonight.
Exactly. And there were people around me who were working on the black project with me that had absolutely no idea what Preserved Destiny was. I'm sure.
Okay.
Now, there might have been people around me who did know about it, but we didn't know each other because it was so compartmentalized, so I don't know. But But there were many, many people that worked around me in the Black Project that had absolutely no idea what the Project Preserve Destiny was.
All right. Can you describe the nature of the debriefing process that you would have subsequently been involved in? Specifically, what questions did your superiors ask about the communications and their content, if any?
They never asked anything. I just communicated what I received into the blank screen and sent it off. I never received any direct contact with a person in relation to my communications. Now, peripheral things like, administrative type of communications, I would receive via email from my PPD commander. Actually, I never even saw at the second base. I never even saw my PPD commander.
Mm.
Never
right.
saw him.
All right.
I saw him the first day when I was introduced to him by the previous PPD commander. I saw him that day, and I saw him a couple other times, and that was it. I mean, the whole time I was there, I never once saw him.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Good morning.
Yes, hello, Art. This is Mike in Philadelphia.
Hi, Mike.
I would like to say hi to all the two-way communicators worldwide.
Okay.
I was like saying that. All right, Dan, I have two questions for you, and I'll hang up for the answer. Number one is, when did such projects begin and end, if ever? And how would you know if you were participated in one of these projects, willingly or unwillingly? I'll hang up for the answer. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, well, I'm not sure I understand the questions. When did they begin? When did they end?
Well, I can kind of elaborate a little bit on when the actual communication phase began. My commander said that physiologically we weren't at our prime as communicators until we were about 25 years old, and that's about the time that I was recruited into it.
That's right. That timeline would be just about right.
So the actual communication phase started probably around 25 years is after 64. So 89, I guess, somewhere around there. But the experimentation phase started in 60, ended in 63. The actual genetic manipulation started in 63 and ended in what I was told March of 68. And then, of course, those children grew up and here we are.
He asked a question about how many participants willingly participated versus those who were unwillingly led into it.
No, I can't, Art, I can't imagine anybody unwillingly doing it. Just because of how my commander came across to me and how he explained it, he was very, very personable. You know, it wasn't some sort of dictatorship.
Plus, the training, as you described it, would not have worked for somebody who didn't want to intensely concentrate.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying, yeah. But, you know, when you're in the military, if you haven't been in the military, you really can't understand it. But when you're in the military, you don't question things like that.
No,
you
I know.
You just do it.
I know. I absolutely accept that part of it. And if you do question it, you end up in big trouble.
Yeah, it doesn't even cross your mind to
All
question
right.
it.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine.
Okay. Hi, Dan. I got a couple questions and a comment. Where were you conceived, sir?
Conceived. I was conceived in, I would assume, in the Valley of California, Sacramento Valley.
Okay, because it's kind of... what month is your birth date, sir?
April of 64.
Okay. It's my personal belief is similar to yours, Dan. I effectively believe that I'm a genetically implanted, biogeneticized, integrated Anglo-Saxon, or Jibihas.
Wow.
Another word for it would be a Jibihak. Genetically implanted, biogeneticized, integrated hybrid analog cyberdroid.
Good Lord.
And that
is that
the
up card?
I think that he's only legal in California now with 209. Anyway, sir.
But anyway, that then one level above that, the Men in Black, which was the one I just described as the MMCD, the main menu cyberdroids, the ones that have whole strict extraterrestrial DNA chromosomes. And
is this leading to a question?
Yes, it is. Which, in my opinion, is true, and I want to get his take on it, that they implant what they call electric electric corridor injectors into the brains of embryos and stimulate their brains with various exciters and to stimulate the growth of small, inactive brain dead, well, what is normally dead brain active tissue, and stimulate it until they become more intelligent. Would you agree that that is what the main aliens that surround us are doing at this time? And I'll listen to my answer off the air.
All right.
Boy, I don't know. I really don't know. I wish I knew answers like that, because that's some interesting information. I don't know what the peripheral missions of all these abductions are, and you know, whether there's aliens among us and, you know, Men in Black and all that. I just don't know. I have absolutely no idea.
Fair enough. So all you know is, in other words, you know nothing about any implants or any of the rest of that. And
well,
what happened to you was a genetic manipulation, and otherwise you grew up with this talent as a result of that genetic manipulation. But even then, that talent had to be nurtured, and you had to, in effect, learn what you could do.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I took some pills, too. They made me take pills.
You didn't tell us that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind
of... There's all kinds of aspects of the story. Obviously, you can't get every aspect of it over the radio. But, I did take some pills initially in school and as well as at both bases.
Did they tell you what you were taking?
No. I asked, obviously, but they just said that it wasn't important for me to know. So, I didn't know.
All right, hold on, Dan. This is just so very interesting, and as Dan relaxes, we're learning more and more. Took pills. Here, son, take these.
Well, what are they?
Oh, don't worry about it. Just take them. That would be the military, all right? Coast to Coast AM is what this is. I'm Art Bell, and we'll be right back.
Taking your calls on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and I'm back again, and my guest is Dan Sherman. And a funny thing has been occurring during this interview, during the course of the interview. When we first began, it seemed to me to be a little rocky. I guess I'm telling you the mental process I've been going through as we've been doing this interview. And I kind of thought, you know, my BS meter was high. But, you know, as the interview has progressed, there are several things that are apparent to me. One, if Dan was going to make all of this up, he would make it up with a lot more interesting details. He said that himself. And I think that's right. In other words, if you were going to weave a tale, you would weave a lot more dramatic, cooperating details into the story. The other is that if something like this really was going on, it would be highly compartmentalized, as Dan has suggested the program ran. Three is that, as I said earlier, abductions, I think, are beyond question. There are abductions. Somebody is abducting, or somebodies are abducting people. That has been proven again and again by a lot of very substantial researchers, from Dr. Mack at Harvard to Bud Hopkins to you name them, we've interviewed them. I believe abductions are real. For what purpose? I don't know. Could this be one of the purposes? Yes, it would make sense. Would communications occur in the manner Dan has suggested they occurred? Yes, that makes sense. His training in the military at NSA in the Gray Project made sense to me. The manner in which they taught him to communicate with these beings made sense. A sort of a brain retraining type of thing. And I have a couple of genetic questions for Dan, and obviously you do because the lines are packed. And so I wonder if, as you call this morning, you might want to comment on, if you have listened to the entire interview, whether your thinking has kind of gone along the lines of mine. Does your BS meter continue to read high, or is it beginning to waver? I'm intensely curious, frankly. Let me tell you about a very good deal on radio. Now, it is raining here in the desert. The forecast is for it to continue to rain over the next many days, with the first in a line of many storms coming in. We're going to have a lot of storms this winter, folks. That's a fact. Whether you continue continue to maintain that we are only in a cyclical weather change, or you believe it to be permanent, the fact is we are going to have a lot of storms. When we have storms, the power goes out. When that occurs, you're going to want a lot of things: food, water, light, and information. The Beijing Free Play Radio will assure you you will get information. Here's how it works. It's got a crank on the side, and inside, the Bayliss Clockwork Generator, invented by Trevor Bayliss in Great Britain. It is an amazing device. It is a full-size portable radio that covers AM, FM, and 7 shortwave bands. So obviously, it's the radio you want when the power goes off, because you crank it for 30 seconds, and this amazing radio then plays for 30 minutes at full room volume. So whether you use it every single day, or you put it on the shelf and you wait for that emergency, it's the radio that should be in every American home. It's $119. Well, actually, we've got a deal going on. Buy one Beijing radio, and the price is $119.95, delivered to your door. Buy two Beijings, find a friend who wants one, and the price is now $109.95, delivered. Buy three or more Beijings, and the price now is just $99.95. Irresistible, huh? Particularly if you're in the Christmas present mode. That'd be the way to go. I'll tell you, anybody who sees one of these radios immediately orders it. So a lot of the orders now are coming from people who show them to friends, and they say, I want one, give me the number. The number is 1-800-522-8863. The time to call, 7:30 in the morning, Pacific. And again, the number, are you writing? 1-800-522-8863. The Sea Crane Company. Dan Sherman. Dan, you're back on the air again. Do you understand the kind of various emotions that I've gone through as I've listened to your story?
Of course I do.
Okay.
My BS meter would be pegged, too.
Yeah. But it's come off the peg, and it's down there somewhere now, and I'm beginning to become more and more interested. You took some pills, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Was this an ongoing thing? Did you take them only once, twice, or every week, month, what?
In school, I took them every day that I went to school, on the weekends. And when I was at my first base, my second base, I actually took them when I was at work. I never took them when I was at home, because I couldn't take them home. They were supposed to stay or reside at my workspace.
All right. Here's a caller who might cause us to retrench a little bit. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hi.
Hi, Art and Dan. Before I ask that, retrench that question or review, do you know what Men in Black are?
Who are you asking?
Asking Dan.
Okay.
Do I know what Men in Black are?
You don't have to tell me. Do you just know?
No, I actually, as far as official, no, I don't know. I know as much as everybody else does,
yeah, okay,
according to the media.
The thing I asked Art, that told Art I'd like to review it, I may have, my radio may have faded or I may have dozed, and I'm sure you've covered it. And that is, now I assume when you were on the machine learning the technique that you were wired for EEG and this kind of thing, or how did the computer know what that you were getting the tone?
All right. That's a wonderful question. It will indeed cause us to retrench. Would you explain slowly, once again, exactly how they taught you to begin receiving these communications? You sat down at a computer?
Sure. Yeah, I sat down in a computer terminal. No mouse, by the way, until the last week or so. And it was a computer screen, a very large one, probably more than 27 inches. It was a pretty big one. And I had 10 different individual screens within the monitor. And each one of them had a sine wave going through the center of the screen, its little individual screen. And I had headphones on, which I was played tones initially, anyway, in the beginning. I was played different tones, and as far as your question about the EEG equipment, there was no equipment hooked up to me at all. A lot of people said, well, did they have any type of monitoring device kind of hidden within the headphones? Well, they look like regular headphones to me, so I don't think so.
Okay. And you were, in other words, you would hear the tone, and then it was your job or your goal to try and modify this sine wave, ultimately flattening it out.
Exactly. Flatten the line.
So they were training your brain to be able to assimilate something or another, some kind of tone.
Well, first I had to hone in on that actual ability. And then once that ability was there for that particular level or plane or whatever you want to call it, we can equate it to a tone, but it had nothing to do with tones as far as the communication goes.
Right.
Once that clicked, so to speak, and kind of zeroed in and focused, then I was to exercise or try to flatten the line even more and move the line, manipulate the line.
Mm-hmm. How good did you get?
Well, you have to have some sort of frame of reference when you ask how good did you get. I don't know if I was good or mediocre or great or what.
Well, in other words, from where you began, where I assume at first you could not manipulate
exactly
the thing, how good did you get? Did you
well,
get
more? Well, at the end, the lines would just, they were just, it looked like a, they were just dancing everywhere. It looked like a spectrum analyzer with a lot of music going. You know, they were just dancing everywhere when I would translate whatever I was reading or looking at or whatever.
Okay. All right. Here's a question for you, Art. Interesting guest. Has his DNA been altered? The answer to that, according to you, Dan, is yes. And so, an obvious question is: have you considered having your DNA looked at?
I would be more than willing to do that. Some people have asked me about that in past, and I'm all for it. I'm curious as well, obviously. I mean, if there's something there that's different, that's readily identifiable, that would be kind of neat. It certainly would lend credibility to the experience, obviously,
yes,
to the story. I kind of have some doubts as to what they'll find, because when you search out DNA, you have to be looking for something. And if you don't know what you're looking for, I mean, this is my...
Then you've got a really big job, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're having a hard enough time just finding things that they're actually know exist.
No, that's absolutely true. Hi, Art, would you please ask Dan if he'd be willing to speculate about what the aliens and the government are up to? In other words, what's going on, the big picture. Any thoughts?
Wow. You know, there's something happened to me while I was at school that I have in the book. I wrote the book, and it had to do with noise cancellation. I saw a van in one of the times that I got out of the van that would take me to the schoolhouse. I got out of the van and I saw a light shining on to the left of me in front of the van.
Uh-huh.
And obviously I was very, very used to getting out of the van and going to the door, you know, that whole process, and everything was the same all the time. Well, this light was different than what I was normally used to, so I kind of looked at it, and then I went around to the back of the van that let me out to see what was on the other side of the van. Well, actually, I stooped down first, and I saw there were wheels, so, and I saw there was a vehicle on the other side of the van, so I went around, and I got to the back of the van, and I looked around, and I saw a white van, another van, parked next to it.
Right.
And just as I got around there, the van driver honked his horn, and obviously it startled me so bad that I rapidly turned around and walked towards the destination I was supposed to go towards. But in the short time that I saw that van, I saw a very distinguishable mark on it. It was a dent in the bumper. Well, later on, make a long story short, I saw that van again, but it wasn't in the schoolhouse. It was outside when I was driving. And so I followed it, and it went to a company that specializes, or that their whole mission is noise cancellation. And I thought, that's very interesting correlation. How, you know, because here I am manipulating sine waves, and, you know, that obviously there could be some sort of link there somehow, some way. Maybe there's a black project co-located there that I wasn't involved with that had to do with noise cancellation, or what I was doing was some sort of experiment with that, with the human mind. So there's another avenue that it could be. I don't know.
All right. I have a question for you, Dan.
All righty.
I have interviewed people from a company called Pear Inc., which has a product derived from research done at Princeton, and it is a computer program that allows a person to sit down, and basically it's a random number generator, and you can pull down two photographs on the computer screen. One on the left, which I would favor, would be total random noise, you know, like a television with no antenna on it, right? Random noise.
Yeah.
And on the right, you would bring down a photograph of, it doesn't matter, a bridge, a castle, a building, something. And these two images would begin to intermix, and your job would be to sit in front of the computer monitor and try and affect one of the pictures to predominate, solidify, you know, the bridge or the random noise. And you would sit there and concentrate, and the computer program would score you on your ability to do that. I've got that program, and I have found, and this is the honest to God truth, folks, I'm telling you, that if you walk away and just let the program run on itself, the scores will be tiny, 8, 10, 12, 14, 20 at the most. But if you sit there and concentrate and actually try to solidify one of the photographs, inevitably your scores will be 60, 70, 80, even 90 or better. And, in other words, I'm telling you, it works. Now, it seems to me that with your training, Dan, you would be a prime candidate to try a program like that.
Yeah. Actually, that would be very, it would be fascinating. To let you know, I have tried on my own, on just regular equipment, because, you know, in electronic intelligence, we work with spectrum analyzers,
sure,
and oscilloscopes and all that stuff. And I have sat there during an eight-hour period and tried to move some sort of electron, you know, the actual sine waves in the screen, and to no avail, to absolutely no avail. So I obviously came up with the conclusion that there was obviously some sort of technology there that is either alien technology or very, very classified human technology or whatever. I don't know, but
this is why I'm leaning toward believing your story, I think, Dan, because at every opportunity, every corner where you could have told us something that would be incredible or amazing or easy to say,
I'm boring instead, right?
Well, boring's not the right word. You're just giving answers that I can respect. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman.
Hi, Art Bell. This is Nick from Jen Moses, Illinois.
Hi, Nick.
First of all, I just want to thank you for the incredibly interesting and fascinating guests that you've had on over the last few months.
Sure.
Richard Hoagland, Sean David Morton, Greg Braden, Al Bielek, Malachi Martin.
Many, many.
You know, they're just incredible, and especially Daniel Brinkley. My question, I guess, is what is the alien perspective of the Earthlings and, you know, the government that they're working with? Do you have any idea of how they ever treated those not of their kind but of ours, other than yourself?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't have any idea of... Was that all your question?
I think so, yes.
I don't have any idea how they treated any people that they've ever met personally, if they have. I do know that they have a... In my communication... When you communicate intuitively, you have it's an extremely elaborate communication. It's not like the two-dimensional or one-dimensional or even half-dimensional communications that we have in comparison. It's an extremely elaborate, and you sense a lot of things in the peripheral that, quite frankly, are very, very foreign to me. I didn't know exactly how to feel about them. But I sensed an extreme compassion for us, and it wasn't the same type of compassion that we have, I guess, but it was almost as if they took pity on us, or you know, we were a lower life form, and they were very magnanimous, and you know, that type of thing. And also, I thought it quite interesting in one of the several of the communications. They referred to us as water humans or water entities.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that was quite interesting because does that say that they're not made up of as much water as us, probably? I don't know. And that is my translation of what they were calling us. That's the closest I could come to putting it into English words. But it was water entity or water vessel or water human, something like that.
Well, that's not really not a surprise. I think, and I can't remember what the figure is, but our bodies are made up of some great mm-hmm. percentage of mm-hmm. Of water.
Yeah, and maybe that tells us that their bodies are not made up of as much water. And I also think that I have speculation also on the pills that I took in relation to some of the discussions I had with my alien contacts.
What do you think they were?
I think that they were designed to increase the oxygen level in my body.
Maybe they were a requirement, and maybe the reason that you have not been able to duplicate moving any sine wave.
Well, I tried that during the time that I was taking that, so.
Okay. I'm glad you told us that. All right. Well, this gets more interesting as we go. Dan Sherman is my guest. His book is Above Black, and we'll tell you how to get that again shortly. This is Coast to Coast AM.
I keep hearing you're concerned about my happiness, but all the thought you're giving me is conscious, I guess. If I were walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry enough. Are you no friends or worried about me? I'm having lots of fun. Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all.
To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. Now, here again is Art Bell.
Here I am. Good morning. Very, very, very interesting interview. Dan Sherman is my guest. He participated in a program that caused him to eventually write a book called Above Black, and we're going to ask about that book again here in a moment. It was called Project Preserve Destiny, and it involved his mother being abducted in or about 1961, and then his use as a conduit, that's my word, in the military, for communications, and he has not yet been able to duplicate that, nor does he have the big picture, but he does have a lot of details about what he actually did. All right, back now to Dan Sherman. Dan, when you were in school, in front of that computer screen, were there others near you, around you? Did you see other people being trained as you were?
Yes, actually, I saw there was one person that was going through school at the same time that I was.
Did you know this person's name?
No, actually, when we were, or when I was first indoctrinated into it, or first told about it and briefed, I was told that I wasn't actually to speak to that person.
Okay, that makes
sense. We never spoke to one another, ever. Not one word. We nodded to one another, hello, and all that, but never once spoke.
All right. We're on about 400 radio stations nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chance that that other person is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that other person were to come forward, then suddenly your story would take a great leap in credibility.
I would imagine he's still in the military.
Oh.
But, yeah, you're right.
Now, presumably, there may have been others who have been through the same training.
Oh, I'm sure there are, yeah.
Is there a way that any of them could get in touch with you? Do you have an email address?
Yeah, actually, they can go to the website, and it'll be there.
All right, and listen, folks, if you want to see Dan's website, and I suggest you take a look, just go to my website, www.artbell.com. That's, and somebody asked me to spell it. It's not all that hard. It's ArtBell, like Ma Bell, .com. And go down to the guest section. You'll see Dan's name. Click on the link, and you'll go to his website. Your book is available to be shipped now. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So if they order now, they'll get it how soon?
Probably within 5 days.
5 days. All right. And you've got a 1-800 number. What is it?
It's 888.
I'm sorry, I say 1-800, so it's not an 800
it's
number.
It's a toll-free number.
Right, toll-free.
888-240-1825. And aboveblack.com should be up in a couple days, so they can go directly to it.
All right.
It's an actually, the 800 number is an automated order taking line, and they can order with Visa, MasterCard, or check money order.
All right. Very good. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Just a comment and a question. First of all, the comment is that I can lend a lot of credence to what he's saying as far as just the terminology and the way he's phrasing things. It's exactly, I'm in the military myself right now. I'm a military linguist. And Navy,
oh,
as a matter of fact. And what we deal with comment, not Elint. But I'm sure you're, you know, at least familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was wondering, maybe you've ever read the book about us called Puzzle Palace.
Mm-hmm. I have read it.
Okay, then you might know what I'm talking about. In part of the book, they talk about how military linguists are used in alien interaction, reporting on landings throughout the world and some sort of communication between them. Now, do you know of any, or have you ever worked with any linguists that work in the same field that you do, or were you in touch with anybody like that, or something along those lines?
I firmly believe that my career field, the electronic intelligence career field, had absolutely nothing to do with my involvement with the Great Project. I think that anybody who is in a career field that can work with the Black Project that surrounds the Great Project, they are the ones that are probably going to be involved with the Great Project. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you have to be an e-linter. You could be, like you said, a linguist, any comment, any jamming or anything
right.
like that could be associated with a Black Project.
Now, how would somebody go about getting into something like that?
Well, I don't think it's something that you pursue. I think it's something they pursue. Now, as far as the career fields go, yeah, I mean, you can. But you know, when I went into that career field, I didn't know that I would be involved with Black Projects. I mean, I had no idea.
Right.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Thank you, caller. Suppose you hadn't gone into that career field. Suppose you'd remained in security.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you think they would have come to you?
I don't think that I would have been in a position to be involved with Great Project, no.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hi.
Hi, Arbel. My question for Dan is kind of a two-parter. One, is he aware of more than one alien race? And two, is he aware of any kind of hierarchy or ordered structure within that is alien race?
Good questions.
Okay. Stay on the line. More than one alien race.
Yeah, I did get the impression that there were more. I asked about, because I have a kind of a Christian fundamentalist type of a belief system, not fundamentalist, but Christian belief system. And so that was something that was very, very interesting to me, so I wanted to find out more about it. And what I got from them was, or from Bones, was that there were two creations. Everything has been created. I got the impression that there was a creator. And he said there are two creations. One is a non-intelligent creation, and the other is an intelligent creation. And he led me to believe, or I got the impression, that there are more than them and us in the intelligent creation. So that answers that question. I think there are more than one alien race.
And what was your second question, caller?
Was he aware of any kind of hierarchy or, you know, maybe some kind of political system within the alien race?
Okay.
No, I never got any impression of that No, I can't answer that.
You said your background is as a fundamentalist Christian. Surely this information and your involvement in receiving it must have been terribly challenging to that.
Yeah, that first day when I went home, or I went back to the hotel after I was told, I went through all kinds of questions, and of course I had no answers, so it was very frustrating. But yeah, I started to question my religious convictions. You know, is there a God? You know, is there something that makes order out of chaos? I mean, it just stood to reason there had to be. And
so then, when you received the message about two different sorts of creation, did that comfort you or challenge you?
Well, actually, not only that, but I. In our communication, I mean, a lot of times I never got a direct answer. Like you and I would talk, and you say this, and I say this.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot of impression, and then I had to deal with interpreting what exactly they were saying. And but my impression was that we all come from the same creator, them and us, and there is one creator. So,
all right, was that? An objective, do you think, impression? Or
it may not have been, Art. My religious beliefs may have tainted that. I don't know. And I have no way of knowing, actually. But I felt comforted, especially in a couple of conversations we had, or communications we had, I felt comforted in my beliefs. Now, he didn't specifically say that Jesus came to earth and
right.
died for our sins and all that stuff.
No, but they talked about creation nevertheless,
yeah.
And two forms of it at that. Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Where are you, please?
Hello, Art.
Yes, hello. I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got a cold.
I'm sorry. A lot of us do right now. where are you?
I'm in Salt Lake.
Okay.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
I think your story's true. I really believe you, but I think you should talk to your mother. I'm serious.
Yeah, I know. You know, I've already discussed some of this with certain family members, and it's created a lot of heartache.
Well, they don't understand, but your mother is also involved.
Well, but I think that she's involved to such a small degree. I mean, now, obviously at the time, she was a very integral part of it. Yeah, you're right. You know, I probably should,
yeah.
but I don't want to create a chasm between my mother and I. And I think that this may do it. It may not. You know, I may be thinking wrong here, but eventually I know it will probably come out.
Well, there are two ways of looking at this, and I think the caller makes a good point. One is that it might be better, Dan, that she would hear it from you.
Yeah.
Then somebody is eventually, particularly after the kind of exposure you're getting on this program,
mm-hmm.
Somebody eventually is going to go to her and say, hey, I know your son.
Yeah.
He wrote a book. You ought to read it. It has to do with you.
I'm sorry, folks. I made a mistake. My name is Bob Smith, not Dan Sherman.
Is it worth asking whether Dan Sherman is your real name?
Yes, it is.
It is your real name?
Yeah.
Then you've got another chance you're taking.
Yeah, I know.
And the caller's right. At some point, you probably should go to your mom before somebody else does.
Yeah, I've been preached this before, I know. But it's a very, very difficult thing. You know, the first person I told was my fiance at the time, because we were getting married, and I thought it was important for her to know. And I was almost in tears telling her, because it was so difficult to do.
How did she handle it?
She accepted it with absolutely no question, because she knows who I am and what I stand for and how honest I am, and you know, she knew me, so she didn't have any question.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hi.
Hello, Art. Good morning, y'all, and to all insomniacs.
Yes.
Number of interesting questions. I love your show, Art.
Thank you.
When I can the upper tape it. I'm pretty familiar with our friends at Fort Meade. How would you go to your school?
That's an interesting aspect of the whole experience. I was actually picked up in a van at my hotel at the Holiday Inn in Glen Burnie. And
you stayed at the Book Inn? Still the Holiday Inn?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it is now.
Right off the exit there?
Huh?
Right off the exit?
Actually,
the one right outside of Fort Meade, or no?
No, it's actually right down the road from BWI Airport and the FanEx complex.
Okay, right. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay, over by the annex. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Glen Burnie, I'm not thinking. Sure, I know.
Anyway, I was picked up by a van, and I was transported to this place, and we would end up in a garage-looking thing. It didn't look like a garage. It just had black walls, and the doors were already closed by the time I got out. Actually, the driver controlled the locks on it, so...
Did the van have windows or not, or...?
Initially, the van did have windows in the beginning. They changed the van in midstream, though, and the second one I had no windows at all. But the windows that I did have in the first one, they were all blacked out. You couldn't see anywhere.
Okay,
you could not see out of them at all.
Okay.
So
I don't know which way you were going, really.
No, I had absolutely no idea. And I even tried to, you know, because you can sense movement, whether you're going right or left and all that. I tried to get a grasp on where we were going, but every single time that we went there, we went a different route, and I know they did this on purpose, but that we went a different route, and it took even different amounts of time. Sometimes it never took any shorter than amount of time than maybe 15 minutes, but
mm-hmm.
sometimes it took up to 45 minutes.
Mm.
So
okay.
I have absolutely no idea where it was.
All right, so... I've got a lot of notes. I've been I'm calling from Cleveland, by the way.
Cleveland, all right.
My name is Dan, also. One of my questions is, maybe why didn't you stay with the program to make, if you felt you needed, did you feel you needed to divulge this before you left?
No, I had absolutely no intention of telling anybody this.
And he's already really told us why he left the program, but it bears repeating.
Well, what I wonder is why maybe you didn't feel you, I don't know, I guess you weren't thinking of divulging anything at the time, but was your curiosity not up to the point of maybe I should stay with this and...
Yeah, okay, let's ask him about that.
More.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, caller. Thank you. In other words, take us through the decision process.
I wasn't in the program to learn stuff. I was in the program because I had to be there. Now, it was neat to... Initially, when I first started the communications with Bones,
or Spock. It was just so fascinating to me. I was like a kid in a candy store. I was like, wow, this is so fascinating. But, you know, after the first couple months, and especially in the beginning, because I was only fed strings of numbers, and that was it. I mean, it just became such a I just did it out of habit. I just, okay, I'm getting the communication. I just started, and I would type in things and then close it. I mean, it just became so mundane and so regular that I really didn't even think about it anymore. I mean, as far as being fascinating and all that. And once you do something for a couple of years, it's like a pig living in mud. He doesn't know he lives in mud. That's his his environment. You know, it's not fascinating anymore. It's not unique and you know, interesting.
But then apparently you began to get another form of communication.
Yes.
And that's when you began to have reservations about what you were doing.
Yes. And I'll be honest. I mean, I wasn't happy in the military. And other aspects too. My job was great. I like my job, my regular job. But I just, there were other aspects of it, and I did want to get out. But that was the straw that hit the camel's back there. I mean, the whole abduction scenarios, and then I started feeling really, really bad about that. I started to get really depressed about it.
Uh-huh.
And then the captain telling me that I wasn't getting out, that was just... It was just a culmination, you know, of a lot of things.
All right. Dan, we've got one more hour, and it's all yours if you want it. Can you handle another hour?
Sure.
All right. Then consider it done. Stay right there. Dan Sherman is my guest, and it's really funny. I have come full circle with respect to how I feel about what Dan has said. I really have come full circle. At the beginning, I had high doubt. And as we've gone along in the interview, I've come to have more and more confidence that what I'm hearing is the truth. It never ceases to surprise even me what I do in talk radio, and it never ceases to surprise me. I rarely do requests, but here it is. This is my wife's favorite song. She says it describes her. A lot of you out there want to hear it, I guess, so here it is. Listen carefully. Does it describe you, my dear?
Kingdom of Nye, from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, dial Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Just smart. Yep. Indeed. All right, Dan Sherman, back again. Are you there, Dan?
Sure am.
All right, well, it's been a long haul. But, you know, it's been worth it, Dan. It's been just very, very interesting as the interview has gone on. I found myself very much in doubt in the first hour, then a little lesser in the second hour, a lot less in the third, and much less in the fourth. And it's, I don't know. It's very interesting. I find you credible. And I'm not exactly sure why. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Matt in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Oh, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Yes,
yes.
Sir.
Okay, first of all, I do agree with you that the believability has just gone on as Dan has talked, and I think a lot of that just has to do with you can tell by the way somebody talks. You listen to them and you can feel whether or not they're making this up as they go. The other thing is, I got a question for him. Is I understand it, that this is a government-run operation that he was involved in at the time, or military, I mean?
Yes.
Correct. Well, but the fact is, have the aliens that he talked to, have they made any contact with him since he's left that program? I mean, I would surely consider that Dan would agree that they have the power if they want to do that sort of thing.
All right. Well, remember two things now. One, Dan was taking some pills, some sort of chemicals, at the time he was doing this. We really don't know exactly what they were. No, there has been no communication, right, Dan, since?
No,
And you've tried?
Well, again, they are the ones that initiated it. I never initiated a communication. So for me to try would be for me to do something that I never did in the first place.
I hear you. All right. Also, when your connection with the military severed, your connection with, you gave them names, Bones and Spock, also severed.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay, well then that clearly implies that it's a military or a government cooperation between an alien race or races and our government. Would you agree?
Yeah. I still hear people recap things, and I think, you know, this is just so hideously unbelievable, but I went through the experience.
Yeah, exactly. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hi.
Yes, good morning. I think Dan almost answered my question. What I was wondering is, Dan, did you get any kind of a feeling how they were being treated? Were they being held as captives? Could you pick up on any of that?
Are you referring to the abductees?
Yes.
Okay.
Not the aliens, but the abductees.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I never got the impression that, you know, they were being held captive or anything like that. I just got the impression that it was being done against their will, for one. It wasn't a all-encompassing, you know, evil type of thing. It wasn't anything like that. But it did strike the human chord in me, in that, you know, these people are being taken against their will, and that's what I felt. It was against their will. And obviously you wouldn't have these types of... you know, the categories like potentiality for recall and things like that if they weren't against their will.
Right.
And there wasn't some stuff going on, pain stuff going on, because you have residual pain levels. I mean, obviously something was going on. Now, were these actual abductions that I was being reported? Well, who knows? You know, they were reporting numbers to me initially, you know, at my first location mainly. Why and if they were in code of some sort, why wouldn't they just pass me the code or pass the abduction data in a code of some sort? I mean, you know, all these questions come to mind, and I even start questioning the validity of what I was experiencing as far as the truthfulness of the information I was receiving. So, you know, there's one corner after another that you have to think about.
Do you believe that the aliens were in complete cooperation with the government, or could they too have been held hostage?
No, I don't know if they were in complete cooperation. I mean, I have no idea what the extent of the cooperation is and how deep it goes and how extensive it is. But I don't think that they were being held against their will, no. I mean, I never got the impression that they were doing anything that wasn't against their will.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is then...
Where are you, sir?
Oh, I'm calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And, you know, if the human race is really, like, you know, according to Zechariah Sitchin, really just Nephilim and, you know, like, hybrid gorilla aliens or whatever, you know what I'm saying? The human race isn't actually, like, a creation of God in a week, you know? That it's actually just aliens from the from Marduk or wherever, you know, the planet, the two planets that are supposed to have disintegrated between Mars and Jupiter, and that's what the asteroid belt is, mm-hmm. and we're that planted race here, why are we still bickering with each other, you know? I mean, what is the point? What is the whole great point? Are the gods laughing at us in you know, satellites? You know, just orbiting the Earth, looking at Ronald Reagan going, well, I can do this whole Star Wars thing and just take over Grenada and okay, I'm not president anymore, but Clinton will get out of office and me and Pat Robertson will jump on some contra ponies with the Duke and D.W. Griffith and the Gibbs sisters on an ice cube and go over Niagara Falls just like Marilyn Monroe. And I'm just kidding around with you.
We get the picture.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, what do you think? What do you think of all that, though? If it's honest that the human race is a hybrid of aliens and primates.
Yep, it's a good overall question, and I suppose you can only speculate.
I don't believe that. You know, there's so many different aspects of reality that we have absolutely no clue even exists, and. All we can see is what we can see. And sometimes we're not in a position to question what we can't see. So, yeah, it's a very abstract idea of what's going on in the outer realm that we can't see. There's probably many different reasons why they're here that we don't know, and I don't know. Maybe even the government doesn't know. I don't know. Yeah, you can get off into so many different intangible discussions with that.
Exactly.
And
right.
By the way, for you folks up in Wisconsin, we've already got two calls from there. One of the three locations that I did look up was in Wisconsin. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Abduction locations.
Yep.
All right, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hi.
Morning, Art.
Morning,
Dan.
Hi.
My question is, this school, could it be the aliens are basically trying to teach us how to use our minds properly?
Mm.
Meaning our God source?
You mean using our minds to the fullest extent?
To the fullest extent.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about us.
It sounded to me like you were just used for a very, very specific purpose.
Yeah.
And I would say that, and this is just my speculation, that our minds are capable of a very great deal indeed.
Oh, I'm totally convinced of that, yeah.
And they just brought forth one little part of that in you for a very specific reason.
Yeah. And we've conjectured on the reason, and, you know, the reason that my commander told me. But, again, we don't know what the real reason was. Maybe that wasn't the real reason.
If you were to guess, Dan, and that's all it could be, I suppose, right now, do you think this program is still going on?
Oh, I'm just absolutely positive it is. I have no doubt it isn't.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Where are you, please?
Oh, good evening. Thank you. Calling from South Haven, Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if he had any physical side effects in the either the schooling or the experiment. You know, I was just thinking if I was in Air Force Intelligence and I
what
wanted
part?
To test if, let's say I was in Air Force Intelligence and I wanted to test out a mini field HARP program to see what would happen if I transmit stuff, I'd probably make up an alien explanation to the subject because he wouldn't have any reason to need to know the details.
Mm-hmm.
And your guest with the HARP information the other night, some of this sounds awfully familiar.
Mm-hmm. You know, people have brought up the HARP issue, and I wasn't even familiar with it until people started bringing it up in relation to what I experienced. You know, there are so many different projects in the military having to do with electromagnetic stuff. You know, weapons and sonar finders, so to speak, and electromagnetic searching type of technology. I mean, there's just a ton of stuff out there. And whether it's correlated with what I did in the Gray Project, I have absolutely no idea. Now, I can conjecture on the noise cancellation thing because I kind of saw the or discovered the relationship there, at least location wise. But other than that, I have no idea.
All right. What made you follow that van?
Oh, extreme curiosity. I mean, wouldn't you? I was exiting off of the highway there, going to the hotel, and I came up to the light, and there was two lanes there, and I was turning right, and over on the left lane, there was a van, and it was a white van, and I just noticed it, and I looked at it again, and I thought, you know, that looks an awful lot like, but no, it can't be. There's just no way. But my eyes, you know, were looking at it, and I kind of went down to the, I found the bumper, and I saw the dent there.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And I just completely freaked. I was like, wow, okay, I got to go follow this. But then I started thinking, well, wait a minute, what if it's the captain's van? And because there were no external markings or anything like that. It was just a white van. And I can't even remember what the license plates were. I think I was too excited about it. So I kind of questioned, you know, we were sitting there at the stoplight and we weren't going, so I was kind of questioning, well, should I follow it? Should I not? Should I follow it? So I said, yeah, of course I'm going to follow it. I can't pass this up. So I followed it, and I followed it to the company that I was telling you about earlier.
Remarkable. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Hi, where are you?
I'm in Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, all right.
Yes, sir. Your guest, in any of your contact with these aliens, did they ever mention if they listened to Howard Stern?
Actually, my guess would be not if they want their world, wherever it is, to remain stable.
Actually, I think one of them was Howard Stern.
Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
I just have two quick questions, if I may.
Sure.
What do aliens eat, and do they go to church?
I don't suppose you're able to answer either one of those.
Well, the eating aspect, I had the impression that they did have some sort of nourishment. I guess that would be obvious. Interesting enough, though, I kind of touched on the lifespan issue, and I got the impression that they had a similar lifespan than us as far as our concept of time, and perhaps even shorter lifespan than us.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me any sense of how you came away with that impression?
Well, again, a lot of these conversations I had over time, and I kind of assimilated information over time and kind of put two and two together and this together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't like I had a transcribed dialogue that
I hear
took
you.
Individual pieces out. But I have certain memories of the discussions that we had and what my opinions formulated into over time.
All right, that's pretty general. You said your impression was that they had a shorter lifespan. Can you give me a sense of what added up to that impression?
Well, we were discussing, that same discussion, I asked him about the sexes and, you know, if they have a sex,
right.
Sexes and things like that.
Right.
And he said yes, they have two different sexes, and then somehow we got into the conversation of, and again, this isn't a lengthy, you know, conversation where you're talking for 4 hours.
I understand.
When we did discuss informally, the discussions probably went on for about a minute or even less sometimes.
Sure.
But I did ask him, and then I guess the question. My thought evolved into their lifespan when they died, and I think that's when I discovered it. But again, when I say I got the impression, it's because of the intuitive communication is not a
direct question
and
answer.
Yeah, it's not word after word after word,
right.
And it's not linear. It's a very non-linear communication.
All right, makes sense to me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
How you doing?
Doing all right, sir. Where are you?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay.
Okay, I got a couple quick questions. Okay, one, does the military assign an MOS, which is a military occupational specialty, for this?
Oh, no. I can answer that one.
No, not okay. The great project.
Okay, then also, I'll get off the phone here. Can you go in like a little more detail of what your genetic, genetic alteration was? And also, did you ever like find out where these aliens were at or get any kind of impression where they were talking to you from?
All right, that is a fair question. I think the first answer is no. He's already answered that. Though genetic testing might be in the offing, and he's certainly up for it.
Sure.
But the other question is interesting. Any idea with regard to, did they ever tell you where they are from?
I never got an impression of where they were. I asked on several occasions where they came from and how they got here and if indeed they came from a long distance. And I always got the impression when I ever talked about any type of travel or location or anything like that, that time absolutely meant nothing to them. Time was not a concept that they were bound by. It was a concept that our reality or we as humans were bound by, but not them. So therefore, distance, when you're not bound by time, distance is no longer valid either. I just never got the impression of how far they were, you know, where they were from. But as far as mode of travel, he said that, and I touched on a little earlier, he said that they actually went around time.
Around time?
Yeah, they didn't go through time, but they went around time with some sort of electromagnetic energy and using time.
So in other words, very much like Howard Stern.
Yeah.
All right, hang tight. We'll be right back and do another half hour. Dan Sherman is my guest from the high and rainy desert. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Stay right where you are. There will be more. Call now. All right. I just got this from Dale in Atlanta, Georgia. He says 9 manatees, Art, have just been found dead in the Gulf Coast around Fort Myers, Florida, and red tide is suspected. Interesting. Lately, Dan, we've been receiving a lot of kind of ominous news about the environment, our environment. Were any messages you received oriented toward warnings or anything that would have to do with the environment at all?
No, nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
All right.
Sorry.
That's quite all right. Wanted to ask. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Hi. I just would like to know if he could explain why there's so much official harassment of people that's had experiences. And I mean, these people carry SES cards, so they're real.
SES? What's that?
Special Executive Services.
Okay. Dan?
Well, again, we're getting into areas of information I have absolutely no idea about. I could conjecture on it, but my conjecture would be the same as anybody else who has, you know, been exposed to the information that, you know, the public has been exposed to. So.
Well, what's your conjecture? I mean, you might as well throw it in the pot.
Well, sure.
All right. As long as we know it's that.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it obviously has to do with public relations hype. And I think a lot of people are approached by people that they think are alien, or excuse me, government contacts or government officials or whatever. But I'm sure that there's a, just like the abduction scenario, I'm sure there's a faction out there that's actually true. And but for the what reason they're contacting them, that's where I get lost. I have no idea. I mean, I don't know. Other than maybe disinformation, I have no idea why they would want to silence, you know, somebody who has
sure.
been abducted.
I sure.
mean,
No, I understand. Wild card line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Just one question. Do you recall the time that you got knocked off the air?
Oh, yes. Vividly.
I believe the gentleman's last words were, they aren't what they say they are.
Something like that, yes.
Something to that effect?
Right.
I was just kind of curious if Dan had heard that and what he thought of that.
In other words, that they are lying. And you alluded to the fact, Dan, earlier, that you weren't at all sure that what you were getting was the truth.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know if you, I'm sure you get a lot of emails, Art, but I don't know if you received the email from me after that. Do you remember it, by chance?
What did, I'm sorry, I don't know. What did you say?
I was I'm familiar with the, some abilities that can do that. And it was a very interesting, that it happened at that particular moment.
Oh, it was, I would say, interesting. I would say impossible, almost. And,
quite coincidental.
Yeah. Coincidental, yeah. At least coincidental. What can take a satellite off the air like that, actually cause it to lose Earthlock? We still have not received a satisfactory answer from GE Americom.
Yeah.
And we're thinking now we never will.
Yeah, probably not.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, this is Jim.
Jim, where are you?
Talking to Art. Oh, golly, Dallas.
Dallas, all right. You're going to have to speak up good and loud.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
Well, I went through all this in Boy Scouts. And, like, the different jamborees and everything.
What do you mean?
Well, the alien abduction, I think. I don't know.
You're saying you were abducted when you were with the Boy Scouts, or?
Right. And then the military tried to take me, and I couldn't do it in the military, so the occult got me now.
Well, I kind of felt abducted when I was in the Boy Scouts, actually the Cub Scouts. Otherwise, I have no idea what he was talking about. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is a very interesting show. Dan, I am also a Bible-believing Christian, and I was wondering, have you heard of a man named Chuck Missler? He's a very well-known Bible scholar.
I think the name rings a bell on the periphery.
Well, anyway, the reason I'm asking is he also obviously is a Bible-believing Christian, but he also believes in UFOs and abductions and that sort of thing. And he has a new book out called Alien Encounters, and I really think you should read it because a lot of the stuff that you're bringing up is very well documented in this book. And his explanation is pretty much... I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Nephilim.
I've heard that, too.
Okay. In Genesis 6. But, a lot of that, he credits a lot of this to the so-called fallen angels.
You think perhaps Dan is a modern-day Nephilim?
Oh, no, not at all.
No?
No. All right. No, but,
I've been called worse.
Yeah, he tends to think that, that these aliens, or so-called aliens, are another attempt of Satan to create a new race of Nephilim.
Uh-huh.
Could be half angel, half human, so to speak.
Well, you know, I've had a lot of people, or not a lot, but a few people write me and ask me if I felt that I was possessed in some way. And these were the communications that I was having. And, of course, I don't know, I've never been... actively possessed, so I don't know exactly what it feels like, but I don't think this was possession. And as far as your question about the spiritual realm, you know, there's just so many different avenues, again, that we can go down that way, and I have absolutely no idea. I firmly believe, because of the fabric of the content, or the content of the conversations and the communication, I believe that it was another intelligence, a created intelligence from God. I didn't sense that it was an evil intelligence, inherently evil anyway. So I don't know where to go with that question.
All right. No, that's a good answer. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Or Bell.
Yes.
Oh, great. Just listen to Dan and yourself.
Right.
And a really great show tonight.
Thank you.
Coming from Canada.
Okay.
And the snow is coming down, and you're so lucky to live in the South, you Americans.
Well, it's raining. It's raining down here.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, liquid sunshine, right?
Liquid sunshine. Mm.
Absolutely. I know it's getting close to the end of the show, but I've been troubled by this thing for, like, many, many years.
What thing?
This thing that I'm 43 years of age. I'm an old guy, and like, from Canada, you haven't heard too many war stories like crazy things, but about 4 or 5 years ago, my hair started falling out the back of my head. I'm getting old. It's like, they call it up here growing a bathing cap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You understand? And one of my friends noticed, he said, Tim, that's a hell of a scar you've got in the back of your head. I said, what are you talking about? I've got a scar that's like over 4 inches on the back of my head.
Really?
Yeah, really. And it's a funny thing because last Christmas, Christmas before, 2 years ago, back home with my mom, I said, hey, Mom, did I ever fall off my bicycle or anything like stupid like that?
Sure.
And she said, oh, no, you didn't, because I've never been in the hospital. So anyways, I had the family look at the back of my head, and I have a, it's a really bad scar. And it hasn't been detected until, as I said.
Until your hair fell out.
Until it fell out.
Makes sense.
43 years of age.
Yep.
And I had a crew cut until I was about 7 years of age. Like, you could see the back of my head, and no one noticed anything like that.
And it wasn't there.
It was not there.
Well, you know what I would recommend to you?
I don't. Go see a doctor.
Absolutely. I'm serious. Well, and get an MRI and see if you've got something in there.
Art, come on. It's not going to happen, but...
Why not?
Well, because, you know...
If I had a scar, particularly a big and long one that I couldn't account for, I'd want to know why.
Well, the only thing that scared me is I fell off a Skidoo trailer up here a year ago last summer, and I had dislocated collarbone, and I had the surgery to put it back in the place, and that's the only time, I've ever been in a hospital, and it was surgery. So I asked the doctor about this thing, like, as a joke.
Yeah.
And he looked at that, and he's a surgeon. He's an orthopedic surgeon.
What did he say?
He said, that is a surgical scar in the back of your head.
All right, well, then, the end of conversation. I would
have it checked out.
That's right. I would go to a doctor and have an MRI, and obviously, if it's been confirmed as a surgical scar and you didn't have surgery, it's a no-brainer, sir. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Dan. This is Professor here in Columbus, Georgia.
Yes, sir.
You know my take on this, Art. By the way, you know, I was right about the Phoenix lights. Remember when I predicted they were a hologram to you and Lamb lives here? Anyway, Dan, have you ever considered that it's possible that this intelligence that you were in contact with could be of the realm of demons? Because I've had some encounters with them personally, and they can come on as nice guys, and they can come on as evil people. You know, their whole job is deception.
Well, again, as a Dan comes from a background as a fundamentalist Christian, so I would imagine that probably occurred to you, didn't it?
Well, you know, it never occurred to me until people started to bring it up. I mean, after the story came out, but you know, I actually have experience within the church, and you know, because I come from a Pentecostal background, I've experienced you know, things such as that, not personally, but have seen it, and so I'm very wary of that. But this never crossed my mind that it was of any type of demonic
origin.
Origin. It was just because I didn't sense that I was in danger in any way. I didn't sense any of that. Again, but you know, you never know. I have absolutely no idea. I can't say it for sure.
I take it there are many, many more details in your book.
Oh yeah.
And it's called Above Black, and people can get it by calling. Check me on the number 1-888-240-1825.
That's it.
And it's an automatic order number, Visa, MasterCard, blah, blah, blah.
And it tells you the address if you want to send a check or money order as well.
Okay, so nearly any method of payment is going to work.
Exactly. We have an order form on the website, too, that you can go through our Bell's webpage, and aboveblack.com should be up in a couple days.
All right. Excellent. There is a website up there right now. Just go to Dan Sherman's name and click on the link. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Oh, isn't Art Bell?
Yes.
Art?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I'm calling from Los Angeles. I'm in Encino.
Yes, sir.
I've tried to call you many times. I'm glad to catch you. I hope you don't mind me changing the subject just a little bit. I was wondering, what is the latest news on pictures coming back from the orbiter of around Mars regarding Cydonia?
Well, there are no pictures yet, sir. As a matter of fact, it'll be a number of months yet before we get any photographs at all.
Oh, I thought it was already in action.
No.
All right. That's all I really needed to know. It's very nice to talk to you. Thanks for the great work.
Thank you. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Dan. My name's Dennis, and I have a question. These bases that you talk about being at, is it possible that one of them was Area 51 in Nevada?
No, actually, I've never been stationed at Area 51. That I can tell you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dan Sherman and Art Bell. Hello.
You know, Art, this sounds... There's a remarkable thread that sounds like remote viewing.
You know what? I agree. It does seem to have some...
It seems to be a correlation in there.
Relationship to it,
yeah.
In a way. The discipline seems very much
similar.
Like it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people have brought that up. Actually, I had never even heard of remote viewing until one of the remote viewers was on one of our local things here at TV, and I was quite fascinated by it. I didn't see that there was a direct correlation. It may be in the peripheral somewhere, but... It's interesting.
It is an interesting observation. It's like it in some sense. In other words, it's remote sensing.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are remote sensing. And numbers are involved, as they are with remote viewing. But you never got actual mental images, pictures, or did you?
The actual medium was not a mental or a picture, but my translation in my mind was a picture. Because, you know, as humans, we think in pictures.
We do indeed.
Yes. So I couldn't get around that, obviously.
Extremely interesting. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dan Sherman. Hello.
Is this Art Bell show?
Yes, it is, sir.
Good morning, Art. I was wanting to ask him a question.
All right, do it real quick because we're about out of time.
Okay, I got a hold of some NASA photographs showing some vehicles, buildings, and bridges and some other things on the moon, and I was wondering if he had ever heard of those.
All right, well, that's
no.
The answer is no, and that's kind of out of his field. Dan, it has really been an extremely interesting program, and I'm going to be interested to see what feedback is like from the listeners, and I'm sure you're going to be getting a lot of it as well. And folks, if you've got a computer, you can send email through his website, through Dan Sherman's website, or what is your actual email address?
It's PPD, Project Clear Destiny, PPD, @earthworld.com.
At Earthworld. Well, Dan, thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Art.
We're out of time. Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's it, everybody. Good night, Spock. Good night, Bones. And all of you out there, see you tomorrow. Hi, Rookie.